Hello. Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. I don't know why I'm doing that. www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. You can like us there. Do me a favor, though, and like actually go to the page and hit like. If someone suggests you like the page, you go to the page and hit like. You don't like a comment about the page or a status about the page.
Okay.
The opportunity to
just don't be fucking stupid, people. And then you can go to my iTunes page. The Matthew Aaron Show's there. You can make comments as well.
You know,
positive, negative. If they're negative, I'd rather they be about Michael Vincenzo Terzo.
Could you sound like somebody just shitting your cereal? Like you had the most perfect bowl of Cocoa Pebbles.
I'm sitting next to Alex.
And somebody came over and shitting it right when
I'm
you were
sitting
about
next
to eat.
To Alex, and he's done nothing but annoy me
and
in the last 20 minutes.
Oh,
first of all, he
deal.
Shows up dressed like this.
Yeah, look at how you showed up dressed.
I just got out of a softball game. Take it easy, buddy. What do you do all day?
Softball game.
Yeah.
Dick-sucking convention. Yeah. Can,
you
take
you
the
just
mic
got done with the softball game. He just got done rolling around
I'm
on the couch with his dog.
All right. So, any hoosers. What were we talking about? Oh, Johnny's isn't the best beef.
Oh,
you know, we have a weekly beef discussion.
No. We're going to, let's not.
I'm just going to say it's one of the best beefs. I don't know
I can agree
best,
with
but
you
it's
on
one
that.
Of the
I
best.
Can agree with you on that. I'd have to do a full scale, like, beef day in order to figure it out.
Well, I did go to Al's, Johnny's,
Al
Mr.
Sucks.
Beef. Al's, I don't understand.
It sucks.
There's only
it's
one
awful.
Thing that's interesting and unique about Al, and that's their hot peppers. That's it.
It's,
you take that out of the ballgame.
I don't even think
shit.
Their hot peppers taste good, though.
You say the one on Taylor is different from the rest.
It
of
is. Them. It is. It is, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's no. It's all bad.
Yeah, it's not. It's really nothing special.
Nothing special. No. I mean, it's better than the franchised
no,
one.
I had a couple. Like
whatever
one
that
Iowa,
means, though.
Fucking
listen. Listen, the one on Taylor is better than the franchise ones, but that's comparable to saying diarrhea, solid shit.
Gotcha.
Okay, so
they're both shit.
Yeah, they're both shit. Just one.
No, I've never been a fan of Al's.
Never. The only I don't know how Al's gets so popular. I think he must own some.
The
somebody.
Same way Betty Lauren Maltese gets popular. All right.
Well, speaking of sisters,
I have a little issue with this broad.
Well, what does she do now?
She's got 5,200 friends on Facebook, first of all.
What's wrong with that?
She even broke the 5,000 limit.
She probably has a lot of friends.
Oh, please. Why is anyone her friend?
They're all her friends.
Why is anyone her friend?
You know every single person she met in prison is probably friends with her on Facebook.
Black Betty doesn't have any friends that are out of prison.
No, it's a bunch of people, too. There.
They don't have
sucking her huge Italian dick. Oh, yeah.
No, she's not Italian.
She thinks she is. Did you see the big wig? Tell me that's a wig. It's got to be a wig.
No, it's her hair now.
Oh, please tell me that's not her hair.
No,
right
no,
now.
That's Aquanet is what's going on.
Oh, is it really?
That's some Aquanet, and
that's
a lot
what
of
I thought.
Going on.
Okay, so she has like 5,200 friends, Black Betty does.
You're jealous.
Why do you keep calling her Black Betty?
Let me tell you something else, too. I'm not calling her by that name of hers. She's
Betty
Black
Loren?
Betty. She's Black Betty.
Oh, Black Betty.
she gets like 100 likes per comment. It's
what
ridiculous.
Comments,
let's read. Would you like to read some?
Yeah,
I'm glad you asked,
wait,
Leonard Canada
ask,
and Michael Terzo.
Are you apparently friends with Betty on Facebook too?
No.
Then how are you reading her comments?
I just spy.
Her page is open.
Oh, you just spy.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Morning, buddies. ... Jeep passed the emissions test. ... Woohoo. ... And do you know that only 13 countries in the state demand this testing? ?
Wait, 13 counties there, pal?
She said countries. I'm just going by what she's writing here, okay? Jackson's mom says he has suffered years of disappointment. I don't know where this comes from. I'm guessing this is Jesse Jackson Jr.
Right.
... He thought he was going to be senator. This is one status. This is one status, mind you.
Oh, this is all part of one
status. Yes, this is all one status. You told me to read a status. I'm reading a status. ... He thought he was going to be senator. ... But how is that possible when he said he knew nothing about his friend trying to buy the seat for him? ? And he wanted to be mayor of Chicago. ... Well, ... Here's some news. ... Most, if not all of us, are disappointed with our leaders. ... Disappointment? ? Many bury their sons and daughters from wars. ... Many losing their homes. ...
Is there a character
Many jobless and homeless. dot, dot, dot. Many going to bed hungry, dot, dot, dot.
Oh, hey, hey, by the way.
And the list goes on.
We get the dot, dot, dot thing. I think you can stop doing that.
I'm just explaining to you how she writes.
Right, right. You could say, okay, blah, blah, blah.
Basically,
and,
here's what she doesn't understand, Black Betty from Cicero. And Lenny, Pat Tobias wants you to give a quick little background of Betty Maltese for our non-Chicago listeners.
Non-Chicago. Betty Maltese was the former mayor of the town of Cicero, Illinois, which was once known as Al Capone's town way back when. She went to jail a couple years ago, was federally indicted on an insurance fraud scheme, lost everything. She's been released within the past 2 or 3 years.
2 years.
2 years. And she's trying to make her way back into society.
So anyway, she's trying to make her way back into society by
using
Facebook.
And there's actually
Facebook.
A lot more out there. Just Google it. Just Google.
And I got to tell you, yeah, Google Betty Maltese. She's an interesting character. Download her pictures, too, by the way. They're
Rod's
hot.
Got balls.
I got to tell you, this her Facebook's ridiculous.
But how many likes does she got?
70 people like this status, which, by the way, I'm only halfway done with.
I want to read those people's Facebook walls, because I'm sure they're not the most...
Here's my thing. Like, she thinks a status is not like... Is she can put, like, 50 headlines for a status.
Well, does everyone end up with those Facebook friends? They don't really
She's
know
old. She doesn't know how Facebook works.
She knows how Facebook works. She posts 20 times a day.
I swear to God, I have 3 people on Facebook that I think are the same person.
Like, what do you mean?
One's an old white woman, one's a middle-aged Hispanic woman, and then it's a guy. And they all post somewhat similar things. I don't know how I became friends with them all, but yeah, these people all were like 4,800 friends.
They're the feds. It's the feds.
By the way,
probably.
Is this what the young political shows are talking about? Because our guest today, James Hurston, he's a big-time political analyst. So,
well, for
okay.
the entertainment, but yes, I was reading through some of his stuff. I look forward to talking to him.
Well, yes, but he is politics
and entertainment.
I was right.
interested with the outsourcing.
Oh, how Obama's outsourcing Hollywood jobs. We'll see about that. I got to ask him about that. I got a couple things I got to talk to Mr. Hurston about. But Brad Sherwood's also, I'm going to play my interview with him in 8 minutes.
Since the power went
at 8:15, 6:15 Pacific time, I'm going to play the Brad Sherwood air. No, I paid my bills.
You paid your bills?
I paid my bills.
Well, there's supposed to be another storm tonight or something, or during this weekend.
Man, power's going
to
go out.
There's supposed to be,
power.
Terzo, you better take that microphone back.
He's mad at me that the power went out.
You better take that back. You ever pull that shit again, you're not going to have one. It'll be the Leonard and Matt show. Talking
Matt.
About Italian beef.
Oh! Oh.
Hey, well, look at that face. Look
Don't
at that
you
face.
Talk down to me, you.
Pretty much. That's about it. All right, you got me.
Right.
Enough said. I'm with the show.
Oh, you got phones ringing in the background here?
Yeah, it's for me. I'm popular. What do you want?
Glenn, is that you?
I'm just looking at these pictures of Betty Maltese, too. And
where the fuck
just,
is
wow,
that
you
phone?
Are still on this girl's
I'm sorry.
Page.
I'm sorry. I
well,
can't
Matt's
handle
a little
it.
Sick today, too.
Matt's
he's
not that sick. He's
extra
just,
strength,
he's go-
NyQuil, cold and flu.
You're milking it.
I don't
Relax.
Even know how.
I'm
milking it?
Isn't your face above the pharmacy? Don't sell this shit to you. Aren't you one of those on that fucking list?
It's also, funny enough, above every math lab. Every meth lab in Chicago. My face. Yeah, don't sell to this guy.
Oh, that's a question. Speaking of meth, Breaking Bad, is it a good show?
Yeah,
of course
it's a great
it's a good
show.
Okay,
how
many times have I told you that?
From iTunes, I'm going to start watching it this
I've
week.
Told you.
Glenn?
I know, but I didn't want to have the commitment of another fucking show, Mike. Mike, it is so hard to keep up with these shows.
I don't even. What show, TV shows do you watch?
Suits, Mad Men, Franklin and Bash.
Suits. Franklin and Bash.
Those are the attorney shit things I do.
The newsroom.
No, but Law then and Game Order. Of Thrones. And I've never gotten a Law and Order. But then Game of Thrones. And then everything. I mean, it's just like after one after Dexter. It's one after the other.
You know, I have a problem. I don't understand this culture of people watching a TV show. Like,
Wait, time out. You don't understand the culture of people watching television shows?
I'm talking about the culture of, like, making sure you're home to watch a TV show.
It's been that way forever.
No, it's been that way forever, but it is transitioning now with the on-demand. You don't have to
No,
be there.
But it's been that way since our grandparents had television.
I gotta
go
watch my program. Because it was ingrained that way
because
there was no reruns.
Mikey, they used to have programming. All the original programming used to be on Saturdays and Sundays.
And used to be live.
Because that's when people were home.
My point is that I'm saying
weren't the honeymooners live?
Mm-hmm.
TV for me has always been a last resort. Like, if there's absolutely nothing going on outside in the world that I can physically be a part of, and I have to be sitting at home, I'll watch TV.
It's like we can't go on roller coasters.
Well,
we go home. We can't physically be a part of a roller coaster.
Mikey, so we watch TV.
Or if the restaurants are closed on Christmas,
if I can't order in a restaurant, I'll watch TV.
I will watch TV.
In all fairness, Mikey just likes to go out a lot more than normal people do.
Well, no, no,
he
no,
likes to adventure.
I enjoy downloading and all that crap and getting my shows, watch them at my convenience.
I mean, here's really the only shows I've ever watched in consecutive order, like made a point to be home. And a lot of times they're on Sunday nights, so I'm home anyhow. But that's The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire. I do actually really do like Breaking Bad.
Sundays seem to be the
I think
best,
that's it.
And I'm really actually getting sick of some network TV. I'm approaching either cable network TV or the HBO Showtime Star series.
Good Wife.
I believe in swearing and all that.
Good Wife, Law and Order, good shows.
Outstanding shows, but not, I don't appreciate them as much as I do as like the Mad Men's and
why?
All that stuff. I don't know why. I just like them.
Hey,
they're a little bit different.
Mad Men's a great show.
Can I
show.
Tell you something between you and me?
I don't know. I don't know why.
Mad Men, not a 4-star show.
You don't think so?
Oh my God!
It's a 3.5-star show. It's not
incredible.
I think if Mad Men and
I don't think it's incredible.
If Mad Men and Breaking Bad were on HBO or Showtime, where they had a little bit less of a,
they had more of an edgy.
No, I think Breaking Bad's better than anything on HBO or Showtime.
No,
I think
what I'm talking about
on TV.
I think I'd be curious if they were on an HBO or Showtime network.
Yeah.
What they would do with the show because they were not sort of they have less restriction.
Right. Like, I wonder if the Playboy Club would have succeeded on HBO.
I never saw an episode.
Yeah, but they'd have to rewrite the whole show.
I saw
that,
one, and when it
that's different. That's different.
Did we have
a
Jenna Dewan Tatum that we had on the show? Yeah.
Yeah.
You had Channing Tatum?
No, Jenna Dewan.
Her wife.
His wife.
His wife.
His wife. Her wife.
I don't know.
You know what? Every time I hear these broads posting about fucking Magic Mike, I want to sit there and be like, you know he's married.
I met a girl that slept through
but
it.
But Katy Perry is now single.
Yeah, that's not going to happen for you.
Want to make a bet?
Yep.
Challenge accepted.
How much do you want to bet?
You think
in
I have
what
more
amount
of
time?
Or Caesar has a better chance?
Really?
Yeah. Because he posted on my wall.
Well, what's the situation?
May the best man win.
What's the situation? So really, it's a rat race.
All right,
anything can happen. All right. Then,
5 years.
Okay, then
I will be on one date with her.
All right. So what's on the line here? Just Katy Perry's love. But it's
just
if one of you get to her, the idea of this whole thing is you will fall in love and be married.
No.
No, I just...
You'll fuck a lot.
We'll date.
Okay, you'll be fuck
date.
Buddies.
We will date.
Fuck buddies.
Actually, I think she'd be fun.
You
I
know...
She'd be a fun girl to hang out with.
I got $10,000.
I'm trying to ask you a question.
5 years, neither one of these guys, let alone get to fucking go on a date with her. They probably don't even meet her. I'll tell
you. Every contest that's out there. By the way, if it's a contest, I still am in the clear.
Okay. Here's the thing. And I'm going to play a Brad Sherwood interview after I respond to this because I'm thinking hard about it.
Okay.
I'm going to have to go with Mikey's incorrect. One of you will meet her in the next 5 years, probably piggybacking on me. But. That being
all right,
said,
hold on. I just want to throw this out.
Actually,
here. Touche, Matt. Touche.
Caesar actually got the closest.
That being said,
Caesar did in Vegas. At
I think Lenny has more chutzpah than Caesar.
Chutzpah?
And I
Is
feel.
Is that the Jewish word of the day that you learned, or what?
Is that a new segment on the Matthew?
I just feel that Lenny's got a little more cojones. And
that's the new Mexican word of the day.
I just feel like Lenny will be a little more...
Gaglione's.
Let's just put it this way. If Katy Perry didn't know what surprise sex was before, she'll know when she meets Lenny.
No.
And
no.
If Lenny didn't know what jail was like before, he'll know after he meets Katy Perry.
That's good. We'll leave on that. Here's my interview with Brad Sherwood from the show... he has a show, Trust Us With Your Life, which last night they had on Ricky Gervais and Mark Cuban, and it's a good show on ABC. If you liked Whose Line Is It Anyway, basically, you'll love that show.
The Gatekeeper, Rick Gervais.
What's The Gatekeeper?
Wasn't he the guy?
Did you say the gatekeeper or the gatekeeper? Oh.
Remember in Ghostbusters?
That's Rick Moranis. Oh. Ricky Gervais. And I'm here with Brad Sherwood. Brad, Trust Me With Your Life premieres on ABC, I believe, what is that, tonight? Or that was last Tuesday, right? July 10th?
Yeah, it premiered last Tuesday, and it's on again tonight. It's called Trust Us With Your Life.
Trust Us With Your Life. And then the concept of the show is people come on, celebrities. Fred Willard hosts the show. People come on. They tell stories about their life. And then you and Wayne Brady and some other people that you guys reenact those stories.
Yes, we basically take creative license with the details of their life and then embarrass them as much as we possibly can.
So who's all a part of the celebrity side of things that we can expect to see? Explain
tonight
how the
Mark
whole
Cuban,
show works. Yeah.
In the first show, and Ricky Gervais is in the second show.
Oh, wow.
And let's see, who else do they have coming up? I think Victoria Principal, Florence Henderson, Jerry Springer, and somebody else I can't remember.
So they come on. Now, what's Fred Willard's job? Because we all love Fred Willard. Fred Willard's the funniest man on the planet. So,
yes. Well, he basically hosts it. He sits the celebrity down and asks them questions about their life.
Okay.
And so he's sort of the go-between. He ferrets out some of the information from stories from their life, and then he sort of turns to us and tells us what to do and puts us through our paces in some Whose Line style games.
And how planned out is this? I mean, I know it's improv, but do you guys have any kind of meetings at all planning this out or no?
No. The only the producers do a pre-interview with the celebrity,
yeah,
and then they discuss what they're going to have Fred give us. But we don't know. We show up, we say hello to the celebrity, and then we go. We don't know any of the details about the stories that he's going to tell or what kind of stories he's going to tell. We hear them for the first time, and then we hear Fred tell us, okay, you guys are going to do this as an opera. And then we take that information and just run with it.
Oh, wow. Now, is that how Whose Line Is It Anyway? Was that how that was done, too?
Yes. We never knew what the suggestions were going to be. They generally got them from the audience, and then sometimes Drew had them on these little blue cards, like some of the setups for the games that the producers would write. But we, as the performers, never knew any of it. So literally, we would hear the song title, and then we would just have to start singing.
Now, who can we expect to be part of the reenactors? I know there's yourself and Wayne Brady. Is Ryan Stiles a part of that group?
Ryan's not doing these. If the show moves to the United States, he might come on board. But right now it's me and Wayne and Colin Mockery,
yeah,
and Jonathan Mangum, and also Greg Proops does a couple of them.
Okay. Were you a part of the guys doing the improv show at the MGM Grand in Vegas?
Yes.
I know Colin was.
Colin and I did that for years and years, like the first 5 or 6 years, and then we were doing our own two-man tour, so we generally were off doing something else, and then we've recently come back and done it. But we also did that show that was called Improvaganza, which they shot at the MGM Grand,
with Drew Carey,
on the Game Show Network for a while.
Yeah, and that was with Drew Carey. Now, explain to me what, like, one of your live shows is like with you and Colin. How does that go?
Well, we get audience suggestions, and we bring audience members up for most of the show, for whatever game we're using, whether we're doing sound effects or moving bodies or all these different games, where we bring them up and they're constantly adding information or making us move, so we have to adapt to everything that they're doing.
So it's very Vegas. It's very Vegas. You have audience interaction.
Complete audience interaction, yeah.
Oh, so are you guys going to be doing more of that? Because I really wanted to see that show when I was in Vegas, and it wasn't playing when I was there.
Yeah, Colin and I have been touring together for about 8 years, and we're still out on the road going strong.
That's great.
So we tour a lot through the Midwest and through the New England area. Those are the two main regions that we do a lot of shows.
Now, Improvaganza is a show. I don't know if a lot of people know about it. It was called Drew Carey's Improvaganza. It was on the Game Show Network. A buddy of mine recently interviewed Drew, and Drew was just saying it was the wrong network for that show. Is that something you agree with, or did you feel like, why did you feel like the show didn't work?
Well, I think it was the most expensive show the Game Show Network had ever tried to produce. You know, they had a bunch of, you know, network-level comedians and improvisers, and they usually had, including Drew, they had like six or seven people on the show every night. So that's a big cast to be paying to be on a show that is on a network where normally they just pay a host and then they give contestants, you know, whatever money they win. So there's it's a much lower overhead generally for a game show. And a lot of the shows that are on the Game Show Network are just reruns of old game shows, you know?
Right.
So it was really, too big a budget show for the network to continue after they did the first season.
Well, Trust Us With Your Life, is that even a bigger budget since it's on ABC and that it's filmed overseas?
Maybe not so much. I mean, it's probably not as much as Improvaganza was.
Really?
They don't have to pay Drew.
Oh, wow. You know? Yeah, that's true. So, yeah. So Game Show Network really tried to do something. So that's good. You can't fault them for trying.
No, absolutely.
Let me ask you, I wanted to ask you about your upbringing. I know you're from Chicago, but you weren't here too long.
Yeah, I lived there till I was 10.
Okay, so I'm a Chicago guy. So I was wondering, like, my question for you is, how did you know, and I'm a Second City guy too, so this is where I'm really, like, interested here. Now, when did you know you were good at improv, other than instead of, let's say, stand-up comedy or just acting, or do you do all those things? And when did you know? How did you get involved with all of it?
Well, I grew up sort of liking to make people laugh. My grandpa was funny and my dad is funny. So I was into comedy as a kid. I watched lots of sitcoms and I read Mad Magazine. So I really loved doing it and making people laugh. And then I think if you're a person that likes to make people laugh just in your everyday life, you're kind of doing improv comedy full time. And then when I moved out to LA after college, I sort of got into a couple of workshops that were doing improv and then got into Second City and realized that, oh, this is what I do best. So, yeah, I'm much better at improv than I am at acting. So I sort of stick with what I'm good at.
Now what is it that, for our listeners who totally don't get it or whatever, because you just said you're better at improv than you are at acting, and some of our listeners are going to be like, well, isn't improv acting? So what is it that makes it different in your expertise?
Well, to me, improv is performing and entertaining, but not necessarily acting. Like, when I'm an improviser and we're getting suggestions from the audience and I have to play a plumber who's, you know, having to deal with a squid attack, you know, I have to act like a plumber, but I don't have to act terribly realistically like a plumber as I would maybe on a television show. So I think there's a different level of either realism, believability, or rules involved in acting versus improv.
Right. Now, I was going to ask you then, now, where was your education for improv, if you will? What's your background for how you learned how to do everything?
Well, I did a lot of workshops and was in the touring company at Second City, and then I was also in a group called Theater Sports, which is sort of all over the country. Theater Sports and Comedy Sports is a similar thing. And just did improv in L.A. for years and years at comedy clubs and theaters while I was, you know, waiting to pay my bills.
Now, let me ask you this, because there's not a lot of people from improv that make it by doing more improv. Like you and Colin, you guys are doing these improv shows, but unlike some Second City people like Tina Fey or Bill Murray or Dan Aykroyd or whatever, and they went on to act and do movies. So what is the future realistically for people that want to do improv for a living, and how would you even go about doing something like that?
Well, I think, you know, really Colin and I and Wayne and the guys from Whose Line that go out on tour, we're the first people to really make a living doing improv. So I don't know what the future of it is, but it's got to be brighter than it was before Whose Line came out. Because really,
right,
improv was just a marketable skill that you use as a comedic performer when you're doing movies or to help you as a writer or when you're shooting commercials, whatever. It was just a skill set that wasn't really a performance-based type of comedy until Whose Line gave it a more wide audience and understanding. So now we're making money at it, and I think some groups that are have theaters set up around the country are generating enough ticket sales that they might at least be keeping a business afloat. But, you know, in the future, now that so many kids are growing up taking classes in improv, they're going to, it's going to be a whole new generation of great improvisers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like if you watch the X Games, you know, when the X Games first started, there were a bunch of, you know, 30-year-old guys that had been skateboarding their entire lives that were really good at it and rollerbladers or whatever. And now, because the X Games have been on forever, kids grow up seeing it, and now there are a million amazing, you know, extreme sports athletes.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, I think that's the best way to look at it, because there's just not a lot of, I mean, everyone knows anytime they see anything with improv on television or on a big stage, it's you guys. So there isn't like a ton of options other than I think people need to start their own shows and try to build an audience. I don't mean on TV. I mean, obviously what they do in the cities you know, you put together a troupe and you try to put together an audience. And I think
that's like putting a band together.
Yeah.
You got to find a place to perform. You know, it's improv is the comedy equivalent of being in a band.
Yeah.
It really is. You've got to find a group of people you like to work with that you do good work with, and then you got to find a place to have an outlet, whether it's a comedy club or a theater or a coffee shop that has open mic nights or whatever.
Is there a preference for you when it comes to improv? Because, of course, there's long form or you know, is there any kind of preference for you how you like to do your improv?
Well, I like both. I mean, I think there's some fun stuff about long form, but I think mass appeal audiences tend to like the short form better because they sort of understand it. I think long form is for improvisers and super improv savvy audiences that have seen a lot of improv. Then
yeah.
You sort of graduate to the next level where you want to see a group of people tell a longer story. So it may not be chock full of laughs. But yeah, it's kind of like, your palate, your comedy palate changes as you watch lots of improv.
Yeah, I agree. I think long form is definitely, it's good for the improviser because you can, it's good because you get to experience new things and you get to go on, of course, a longer period of time, and it gives you more opportunities to fail, which, of course, I think is the key to improv is failing. Did you ever learn anything by failing at improv?
I think every moment in improv in a scene is a success failure.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're constantly taking the pulse of the audience to see what is working and what isn't working. And when something isn't working, you immediately shift and change and do something different. You know, you're constantly altering your course every moment of a show. So I there's no such thing as a scene that is perfectly successful all the way through, and there's no such thing as a scene that is complete and utter failure. It's about taking each unexpected moment and trying to craft it into something funny that makes you laugh and makes the audience laugh.
So what is, like, in your experience, Brad, what is, like, the one time you remember was a really rough time for you on stage and that you took something from it?
Like I said, I think every moment I'm in the state on stage of this is either going to work or it may not work. And so I'm constantly expecting it to not work. And if you work from that place, then you are sort of working in a crisis management mode that if you cannot get too scared by it, then it's a pretty good thing.
Yeah. Now, what for you is like your worst experience in showbiz? Have you ever had like a really bad showbiz experience?
I think showbiz in general is pretty demoralizing. You know, you get more no's.
Yep.
You get more people telling you why you can't do something. If you try out for 100 jobs, you may get one.
Yeah.
I think that is the worst part of showbiz. There's not like one moment where you go, oh, God, this was the worst gig I've ever done. You can remember moments when you're on location and you're just freezing to death and you're getting hit with a big wind fan and the mud is blowing in your face and you think, this sucks. But it sucks for that moment, but you're doing what you love to do. You know, it's the struggle climbing up the ladder to get to do what you want to do, which is the hardest part of showbiz.
Yeah.
I don't think there are a lot of other types of jobs in the world that have that much rejection involved.
No, I don't think so either. It's funny because, you know, I live out in L.A. I'm back in Chicago right now, but I live out in L.A. and it's funny because everyone is on your side. Everyone loves you. But then when it comes time to, you know, employ you, there's a thousand reasons why you can't do it. But they love you still.
So, yeah,
we love you.
Very few people get to the success level where they can create jobs for their friends. And, and that's the case. And the entire showbiz industry is like a game of musical chairs. The music stops and there's not enough chairs for everybody. You know,
yeah.
So you're so busy grabbing your own chair that you don't have time to point out a chair to your friend going, there's one, there's an empty one.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a tough business. Like, sports is a very competitive business, but if you try out for the NFL and you don't get in, then you don't get in and then you move on.
Right.
You constantly have to try out for the NFL in showbiz. You know, every job is a new attempt to get onto a team.
And the problem with
the
problem with showbiz is, unlike the NFL, where you know if you don't make it, game over.
Yeah.
You don't know when the game's over in show business. You don't know when you're
constantly having to. You're only while you're employed, it's good. And the moment that job stops, you are back to square one potentially. No matter how famous you are, you might end up, you know, unemployable. If you look at, you know, people that have had the ups and downs of a career, like a John Travolta, you know, after Welcome Back, Kotter, he disappeared off the face of the earth. Well, actually, after Grease, you know, he disappeared off the face of the earth until Pulp Fiction came out.
Yeah.
You know, and when he was on Welcome Back, Kotter and Grease, he was like the most famous guy in the world.
Yeah.
And right at that moment, he probably didn't think, oh, I'm not going to work for 15 years. I'm going to be unemployable and no one's going to know who I am.
I think my favorite piece of advice from Hollywood is Cindy Williams from Laverne and Shirley told me. She goes, save all your money. Like, when you're working, save it all. She goes, don't, you know, because you never know when that job's going to be the last job for a while.
Yeah.
You don't know. Like, I was going to ask you, when you did Whose Line, and then Whose Line Is It Anyways goes off the air, are you scrambling to figure out what the next move is? Are you guys putting together? Were you guys already doing the two-man shows, you and Colin? Or
yeah, we basically started the touring right as Whose Line was coming to an end.
Right, so that was your plan, right?
You know, we're lucky to have, we call this our full-time, part-time job. I think we've made more money off of our tour after the show than we made doing the show.
No, I believe it, yeah.
Lucky for us that we have a skill set that we can market and capitalize on the notoriety that we had on the show. A lot of people, you know, the cast of Facts of Life can't go out and do a Broadway musical because they were on the Facts of Life. We get to use the actual skills that people liked us on the show for to perform. So
how did you guys put together this two-man tour of yours? What is, like, all right, so you have some notoriety. You got some fame going for you guys. All right, so maybe you guys can get booked at places. Do you have to hire someone to book you guys, and then you guys come up with the creative?
We have a booking agent that goes to theaters and corporate buyers and gets us work.
Yeah, and at the MGM, that was a huge hit for you.
Yeah, that was fun. That's when we were working with Drew and the rest of the Who's Line cast.
Yeah,
and it was a fun big show. But you know, when you're on a 10-person cast, you're not on stage all the time. Colin and I wanted to be on stage all the time. So we thought, well, if we do a two-man show, we'll be on stage all the time.
Did you have to live in Las Vegas for that show?
No.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
We just shot that on several weekends.
I was going to say, I loved your expression there. No. I would never live in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, people are surprised by how little time the seasons of Whose Line took to record, and the same with Improvaganza. We shot the entire season of Improvaganza over the course of, I believe, 4 different weekends.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that
God.
Was it. And Whose Line got shut, a season of the Who's Line got shut over like 3 or 4 weekends. We would just do shows Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the thing is, we got so many great games out of one shooting of an episode that they would edit it into 3 shows.
Now,
so on a perfect weekend of Friday, Saturday, yeah. Sunday on Who's Line tapings, we would get 9 episodes.
Wow.
Which is basically a third of a season.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
wow. That is compact.
Very affordable for them.
Yeah. Did you ever feel like exhausted doing that much, or were you good with it? Were you like the marathon man?
You shoot for like 2.5 hours on any given one tape day, and you know, we got a live audience there, so
yeah.
That kind of adrenaline kicks in for performers. You know, like vampires, as long as you keep laughing, stay alive.
Yeah, the audience helps a lot. Now, Trust Us With Your Life, is that shot the same way, or are you guys, is that more of a week-to-week schedule?
We shot for 2 weekends for the 8 episodes that we did.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah, so I think, I can't remember whether it was 4 different days. It might have been a day where we did 2 shows back-to-back. I can't remember. But, we would just shoot for about 2 hours, and then they would take the best half hour of that episode. And then they also have other material in the can. So, for example, if ABC really likes the show and would like to put up some extra episodes, there's a bunch of unseen footage that we could like do a second Mark Cuban episode and a second Jerry Springer episode and a second Serena Williams and all that.
So I know you don't produce the show, but maybe you've heard, was it hard getting American celebrities to come overseas to do the show?
I have no idea what the producers had to go through, but you know, they got a sort of an interesting eclectic group of celebrities to do the show. Oh, we also had Kelly and Jack Osbourne.
Wow.
So it's kind of a fun group. It's all different walks of life, sports and entertainment and music and rock. And but I don't know how hard. I would say that if the show takes off, it'll be even easier to get celebrities on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's the word, do you know, coming from ABC? Are they enjoying the show? Are they have you heard anything at all from the studio?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. That's a conversation, obviously, the producers will be having. And then they'll disseminate the information to us, either with a big bottle of champagne or just a phone call saying, keep looking for work. You never know. As long as people keep trying to get improv on television, I think it's good. It'll keep me and Colin and Wayne and Jonathan and Greg and Ryan and the guys working.
Yeah, I think that'd be that'd be good to have this show on the air. I love any time. First of all, I think there should be an improv show on the air all the time. I just think so. I just think it's good for, in an art way, I think it's good for the culture to have one of those shows on the television.
I agree. There's only one improv-based show on television right now, but there's probably 6 cake decorating-based shows.
I know.
So it's really weird.
And it's funny because I don't think
stations, networks, and producers are afraid that they don't have full final control over content when they hand it to the actors, who are basically writing it on the spot. There's no script to pre-approve. So they have to make a giant leap of faith, trust in their performers, and they have editorial control over the final product, but they have no content control over what's going to be on an episode.
That's great, because I was thinking the same exact thing. And when I say that on my show, I sound like a conspiracy theorist, because that sounds like one of those like crazy conspiracies. You're not in the business. But what people don't understand that aren't in show business is these are corporations that own these networks, and they want complete content control over everything that happens. And when you're doing improv, it's really hard to control the content.
Well, in a certain sense, to sell an improv show, you're kind of like a snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
You just have to say, trust me, this works. You know, if you do a sitcom, they have it. They write the show, they do a rewrite, they do table reads, they get notes from the network and all the producers, and so it's art by committee, where it's rewritten and hammered out and smoothed out and made less offensive and made a little funnier and so on and so on. With this, it's just they point at the four of us on stage and go, trust us, everybody. These guys are funny. They're going to make it work. And people that are shelling out all the money to back a show like this, you know, to them it's a risk because they're so used to doing the tried and true formula of getting to pre-approve what the final product is going to look like.
And it's funny.
It's kind of like having to believe in magic a little bit.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's funny, too, because I'm sure people out there are thinking, well, those cake shows probably cost less money. No, they cost more.
Yeah.
They cost more money. I mean, if you guys are filming four episodes in a weekend for a fucking TV show, I got news for you. Those cake shows cost more money.
Yeah. Yeah, so, they have to follow those people around for 2 or 3 weeks just to get one episode.
Yeah, you don't become the cake boss without having people following you around for weeks.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Maybe your next show could be Trust Us with Your Network. That'd be good.
That would be awesome.
You guys should do an improv show where you guys are at pitch meetings because those are the worst on the planet. And I can imagine everybody I talk to, I've had this experience. I know a ton of people on my show have. You know, pitch meetings are the worst thing on the planet, correct? They're brutal.
Depends. I mean,
they're brutal.
Pitch meetings can be really great. Pitch meetings for like advertising are awful. Pitch meetings for shows are always great because they smile at you and tell you that that was amazing, blah blah blah, and then they shuffle you out of their office and you think, wow, I just sold a TV show, you know, and then they get back to your people and tell them, nah, it's not going to happen, you know.
Yeah, they
no one in show business ever tells you straight to your face. That they hate an idea.
They
always tell you they love it, and then, it's kind of like when you're in college, you know, breaking up with a girl. They do it over the phone.
Yeah, that's about right. They smile, fuck you, and then your agent calls you, and you had this great meeting where you're like doing jumping jacks. You're like, I killed it, and then your agent's like, yeah, they didn't like you. Oh, they didn't like me.
It's the same with auditions. That's why you can never really tell because and thank God it would be really painful if someone in an audition looked at you and said, oh, that was really bad. You have no chance. They would smile and say thank you and shuffle you out the door and you think, wow, I guess I'm probably one of their top picks. No,
that's about right. That's so true.
That's the best part about doing live comedy is you instantly get the feedback and you know whether what you're doing is funny or not.
Yeah,
you
know? isn't that great?
No middle ground.
Isn't
you have a live audience?
Isn't
you're laughing or not at what you're doing?
Isn't that the best part of doing that tour with Colin? Though, is that you guys know you're selling out these dates on your own based off your talent and the merits of your talent. Like, there's no network approval. There's no ratings. Like, you guys are just scoring every time.
Yeah, it's my favorite job I've ever had. As much as I like, you know. Doing improv or hosting a show on television, doing live improv out on the road is the most rewarding, fun occupation that I've ever had in performing.
That's great. Well, Brad, I got to tell you, I'm really looking forward to watching Trust Us With Your Life tonight. Mark Cuban's on, Ricky Gervais is on. If Fred Willard's hosting, then I'm assuming he's going to tell us how we could be millionaires like Mark Cuban. So, I'll look forward to that. And then, of course, Wayne Brady's on as well. Colin's on. And then you got the Colin and Brad Show, which you can go to colinandbradshow.com for. And then you got your own website, bradsherwood.com, which people can visit and get all the information they need. I'm so happy you did this, Brad. I'd love to have you when I'm out in L.A. Do a live show. That'd be great.
Yeah, sure.
I know you're a busy man, though. You're touring all the time.
Yeah, summer. I'm really available in the summer. Once we start back up, then yes, I'm always out on the road. But
you're like a third grade teacher.
Very much so.
Well, thank you so much, and trust us with your life tonight. Every Tuesday in July. And hopefully in August as well on ABC. Do you know what time that is, Fred?
I think it's 9.
I wanted to say 9. I wanted to say 9 Eastern, yeah.
Yeah.
9 Eastern, 9 Pacific, 8 Central, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Brad, and I hope we could talk soon. I had a great time talking to you.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Oh, Mike, you there?
Are you still are you racing cars?
Are you racing?
I'm here.
Are you racing cars, Mikey? I wanted to just say what I really dug about Brad Sherwood is I like that, you know, we went to Vegas 2 months ago, Lenny and I, one of the three times we've been in the last 6 months. We go to Vegas.
Get broker every time.
And at MGM, they got that improvaganza, the Drew Carey's improvaganza. Yeah. Here's the thing. Those guys are the only guys getting paid, making a career out of what they do, really. I mean, other than improv teachers and what have you. But, like, as improv artists, those guys are the only guys getting paid. They're the only ones that can make a living that way. And there's something to be said about that because it doesn't matter about ratings. It doesn't matter about any of that kind of stuff. The guy makes it on his own merits. He's talented. They sell out every show they go on, Colin and Brad. And him.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
It is. It's very impressive when you are not only mavericks in your industry in a way because you found a way to make money based off of something you did as practice, like improv, but they're the only ones doing it. Right. I mean, Saturday Night Live, that's sketch comedy. That's all written. Yeah, they were all improv people, but it's all written. And then TV and movies. It's all written. This stuff, they do these shows legit. He talks about these shows as they don't know what's going to happen. They're not given anything. The producers don't give them anything until it's showtime. So,
well, how much producing do you do for a show like that?
Well, for the show they're doing, because they have the celebrity factor and they got to bring on the celebrities to give them a story to tell.
Well, right, but I'm talking about in the sense that, like, you know, there's not a whole lot of writing going on.
And no, isn't producing a nice gig?
Yeah, so far producers just sound like they do a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, well, remember when we asked Tim Gibbons what a producer does?
And he couldn't really say.
It was worse than my Alderman answer.
The president of the yes. Worse than your Alderman answer. The president of the Producers Guild could not give us a straightforward answer on what a producer does. Maybe James Hurston can give me an answer at 9 o'clock.
Producer is one of those made-up positions like in Chicago government where you get paid just because you're friends with somebody.
Well, that could be. That could be.
You know, like sometimes when they're federally funded positions.
Those are filler positions.
By the way, I don't want to be off topic, but real quick, in 15 minutes, James Hurston joins me.
Very nice.
I want to tell you what we're going to talk about first before we get to politics and everything else is James Hurston wrote a very interesting column about how they're going to start making 4D movies. Movies in 4D.
What's the fourth dimension?
That means if the movie has, like, effects in it or whatever.
You mean like when I went to Disney World and, like, when the mice showed up on the screen, they had, like, little air things that, like, shot underneath their seat?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interactive kind of experience, it sounds like.
The movie's still going to be in 3D,
though. Well, I'm going to talk. I'm going to ask him about that.
I'm not a fan of 3D movies.
I think they really could improve on 3D movies.
They're
not very 3D.
We're also going to talk about Obama's Hollywood, as he calls it. And I'm going to let that just go.
Well, I want to find out where he went to law school as well.
Well, we're going to get into all that. But Obama's Hollywood... Obama's Hollywood, he says, is going to be outsourcing a ton of jobs, which, by the way, he's not wrong about.
Well, it's no lie, though. But
what's this whole drama right now with Bain Capital? Same thing.
Right.
Same thing. You know, Romney said for months and months and months, no outsourcing jobs, and turns out Bain Capital is okay with it.
Except Obama is not the president of the Universal Studios.
Right, and Obama never, quote, invested into DreamWorks and Walt Disney,
because
the Mouse House is definitely overseas, and DreamWorks is now.
They're outsourcing it a little.
They are.
Those are your people.
Look, but by the way, Obama may not have any stock invested in them, but Obama's getting money from them, millions and millions of dollars. So, you know, it's all one hand washes the other, and that's why I'm going to ask James, really, what's the big deal here? I'm just saying. Wait,
aren't people
look.
Usually for efficiency too.
Look, we should all be outraged that Mitt Romney and Obama are secretly okay with outsourcing some jobs. Maybe not a ton.
Benefactors.
Right. Maybe not a ton. We should all be secretly outraged. But let's be honest. They're both doing it. And is it really the biggest problem on the planet? I don't know.
Well, the Hillary guy.
You know what?
Well, let's not go there.
My personal opinion is, as the time goes on in this world,
yeah.
As much as we hate to admit it, or you know, people want to talk about how they talk about it in the Bible or whatever else, the reality of it is that our world is becoming a one-world economy. Whether it be, you know, it started with trains, and then ships, and then airplanes, and then the internet, and this whole world is starting to become interconnected. So to go from here to China is no longer a fucking 2-week adventure. I mean, it's that distance is being shortened. So. Unfortunately, with outsourcing, I think that for a lot of our companies here in the U.S. to compete on a global scale outside the United States and other countries, they have to outsource to stay competitive price point.
Yeah. I think I should outsource my producer's job because Caesar just sent me a list of things a producer does. And I challenge anyone to go through this
list. Can you
list.
Read this list? I'd be interested.
Yes.
Because after, here's what I want to do. After we're done reading, actually, every item
every
we read.
Every item you check and say
hold
if
on.
Caesar does it.
Exactly. Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page here.
Okay. Conceived of the underlying concept upon which the production is based or involved at an inception.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole lot of, that sounds, that not only did he not do that, okay. That also sounds like something that doesn't mean anything. That sounds like the biggest political answer I've ever heard. Len, okay. You should be taking notes on this.
Yeah, producer sounds like politician. Yeah. selected the material upon which the production is based and secured necessary rights for development and production of the material. Well, that does not really apply here.
No. I mean,
selected the writers. That does not really apply here. Supervised and oversaw the development process.
Could you Google what a producer does and see if he copy and pasted this from?
No, he sent it to me from theproducersguild.org.
Oh, okay. All right, well, keep going. Let's hear.
Supervised and oversaw the development process. Supervised is such a vague term.
None of this is very, very...
this is all very vague.
This is not very specific.
Well, it allows for a
is broad there more?
Stroke of what you
Wait.
Can do.
Secured the initial financing?
That's about the only thing I can find that a producer specifically does.
That one's pretty specific. Served as the primary point of contact for the studio and or financing entity.
Okay.
So there's two things a producer. So basically, here's what I'm learning a producer really does. Watch from a distance, act like you have some say in something, and get the fucking money.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pre-production. Selected the director, co-producer, and unit production manager. I'm not too sure about that. Studios may actually have a few disagreements with that. Selected the principal cast in consultation with the director. In other words, the director. And you go, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's some exceptions. If you're Jerry Bruckheimer, you have a little more control.
Right.
But if you're some guy that's just putting in the money in a production, you put in your money, now go sit on the sideline and shut the fuck up.
And hope we make something.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can't even go through this list. It's kind of just, it's just very, a lot of generalities. There's just so many generalities in this thing. I don't know. Participated in location scouting. Well, he did not find my mother's basement.
Well,
that was me. And Coney Dog.
Congratulations.
Yeah. You know, I sucked a lot of Mike Binder dick for that joint, all right?
Whoa. Relax.
Oh, you made me.
Mike Binder hot dog.
Hey, don't forget, Mike Binder said on my show, when he did the show, he sucked a lot of Jerry Van Dyke dick to get in the business.
Well,
so.
You know, I'm just going to throw this out there now. Detroit style Coney Island dog over on Sunset Boulevard.
8873 West Sunset Boulevard.
Wonderful. Get the
California corner from the Hudson.
The LA style dog. They got Jewish dogs. They got beef dogs. They got kosher dogs.
They got
dogs.
Jewish dogs?
I meant kosher dogs. They have the beef and then they have the regular hot dogs.
Coney Island crack.
The Coney crack.
The Coney crack.
Ask for the Coney crack.
The Coney crack was all over your face.
Yeah.
It looked like a drug bust.
Like
that looked like
Miami
a.
And Miami.
It looked like it. I'm sure.
Well, the first time you bit into that sandwich, I just seen the yolk.
Well, you know what? Right when I was biting into it, Mike, I could tell Mike was like, "Hey, and then, yeah, I was going to warn you about that."
Caesar's arguing it was him that asked Mike about the company location, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but if I wasn't friends with Mike, it wouldn't even be an option. So next.
Hold on. Is there anywhere on that list where it mentions producer's job is to be used as the, like, you know, like as a source for satire and somewhere to poke fun at?
Yeah, it's right here under production.
Under production.
Producer is to be used for all comedy skits, sketches, and otherwise.
We took it a little more.
All right. Well, see, congratulations to Caesar. He's playing a part in everything. See, the best thing about this is I love poking fun at him because he can't take a joke.
Can take a joke?
He can.
Oh, no, he can't. No, he cannot. I know. That is his worst flaw.
No.
You can't take a joke.
He's probably researching something on the internet to email to you right now.
That means there's a list, Lenny.
There's something to precede that. Okay.
Speaking of lists, how about Saturday night? I got a fucking list for you before Jimmy Hurston comes in.
Yeah, like,
I hope I can start calling him Jimmy Hurston.
Well, what would you call him otherwise? Mr. Harrison?
James Hurston. But I want to call him Jimmy Hurston.
Wait, what list from Saturday?
Where do we begin?
I got your Tylenol and water.
By the way, bravo on that.
Thank you. Tylenol.
How about your?
No, this list may not involve you. It just may be because you were there.
Did you meet the nice lady friend that he brought out? Like, yes, Sarah?
Did you know Tylenol's been recalled?
Yes.
We did.
They found that acetaminophen is actually extremely damaging to the liver and internal organs.
Oh, no, we knew that for years, but Tylenol still knocked out a headache.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't use Tylenol that often, so we're okay.
I use the Aleve.
I use Advil. Advil PM is my drug of choice.
You know,
because it's blue.
Time out. Let's just throw this at you. You know the PM part of any Tylenol PM, Advil PM, any
post-menstrual?
No.
Okay.
All the part that's supposed to help you fall asleep. You know, all it is Benadryl.
Not great.
So if you really want to just knock yourself out, take like 10 Benadryl. You'll go right to sleep.
That's what NyQuil's for.
Just to wake up. Yeah. Mikey needs 10 Benadryl.
You remember something. When my back was messed up, I was in so much pain to sleep, I would take 15 to 20 Benadryl every night to go to bed.
So by the way, Saturday, speaking of drugs.
Oh, it was great sleep.
I had such a headache hanging out Saturday that at one point I grabbed Lenny's vodka and was going to swallow these pills with Lenny's vodka. You had to stop me.
I stopped you.
You had to stop me.
I was drunk.
You were gone.
I was hammered.
You were gone.
I still noticed what you were doing.
You were gone. You were gone. You still noticed.
Even though it looked like water.
But, yeah, Sarah came out. We owned Carmine's at one point.
We had 15, 20 people in Carmine's. We owned that bar area.
Right.
And we owned the piano player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you tip him? No, you didn't. You didn't tip him.
You did. You gave him like 10 bucks, I thought.
Shit, did I?
Yeah, it was a 10, not a 1, pal.
See, this is why I need an accountant when I go out.
He gives the piano player $10, and then he goes, play my iPod.
Which is at my house.
Hey,
101.1 went off the air.
What?
Hold on. I'm going to do a quick reboot. Okay. Hold on. Wait, so Q101's totally gone now?
Q101,
then it was
a
news.
FM news.
I kind of like that format because it was a little more edgy.
When the light's on, the news is happening. Yeah.
Well, now it's I101, and when I first saw that, I thought this was an Apple-owned station.
Yeah.
And if you listen to it, you think it is like an Apple. It's someone's fucking iPod there. They don't have jockeys or anything yet. It doesn't even advertise the name of the station. It's literally just one song to the next. Acoustic.
Anyway, that was the fact comment of the day. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate you connecting.
If there's something acoustic sunrise, I don't know what
it is. What's an acoustic sunrise?
I don't know. Apparently,
it sounds like a bad drink, bad bar.
Yeah, that sounds like.
Or it sounds like a date gone really well on Halsted and
Whiskey a Go Go.
All right. I was going to say, I've heard the acoustic sunrise. That's what happens after you go to one of those bars on Halsted real late, right?
The acoustic sunrise.
You get the acoustic sunrise.
You wake up to a guy playing a guitar with a cowboy hat on and no pants.
That's what I meant, the guitar. Yes, he's playing the guitar.
How many acoustic sunrises have you had in
the
Saturday mornings there, Alex?
He heard a great rendition on the skin flute of the acoustic sunrise the other night. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was real acoustic. He hit every chord just perfect.
James Hurston's calling in too, by the way.
No. Love James.
Yeah, he's probably listening. Like, yeah. Yep, delete.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, so suddenly my kid got sick and
I'm waiting for that.
I finally have to rearrange my sock drawer.
I'll be okay with that.
Throw myself off a cliff. Oh. Because your show is horrible. Oh. What are you just itching?
I just itched left man boob. I feel like, man, I'm so
You know, I got
sick.
Some pills that can help you out with that, you know.
With what?
You know, the boob thing that you're growing over there.
Excuse you. It's not a boob thing. It's a...
That's a boob thing. Yeah. You getting a little self-conscious right now?
If I just flatten them out, what happens?
Wrap yourself with some Ace bandages.
Wait, no. Is there really a pill thing?
Yeah, it's called Novadex. Sequencing estrogen modulating responder or something. I forgot what it stands for.
I'm not going to take estrogen.
Basically, what it does is it prohibits your body to recognize estrogen in the body, which then then your body goes in the assumption that it has no estrogen in the body, and then you work on full testosterone, and it should help reverse some of those effects over there for you.
But won't it also help speed up the effect of no hair?
No.
No, testosterone is supposed to help you grow hair.
No, I thought too much testosterone
means you get rid of your
hair.
There's DHT, dihydrotestosterone.
Where do you get this drug?
A byproduct. What?
Where do you get this drug?
You know, doctors prescribe it.
You have to ask for it,
MDs,
though.
Right?
Yes.
Yes. Medical doctors. Not dentists. Medical doctors.
No, like, well, not
you
MD.
Really think my pecs...
Veterinary
doctors? Are my pecs
no.
getting too big? Are my pecs getting too large?
To call them
Listen
pecs.
To me.
The fact that you have to move your shoulders means your pec muscles aren't
blocked. I'm shaking my pecs.
Okay, then.
That's what...
Never switch?
All right, well...
So anyways, I can get this Nova...
Yeah, let's not worry about it. You actually have to have a gyno first to worry about it.
Why would a guy have a gyno?
I need to get a gyno.
We'll carry on.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a huge favor. You two need to take over the show.
Okay.
I got to go to the bathroom.
All right.
Do you really?
Number two.
It just hit you.
Explosively.
What time is it?
We'll give it a minute. If he calls in, just leave it on hold. James Hurston, he'll wait. He's a proper man.
Well, why don't you go to the bathroom now and start working on your
program? Oh, that's only going to make me want to go more. All right.
So how do we pick up the phone?
You can't really. So, what do you want to talk about while I'm gone? Or are you guys just going to... Tell him about Saturday. Tell Mikey about Saturday, and then I'll fill in my stuff when I come back.
Okay.
It was a good time.
So, tell me about this this jamoke that felt like the world owed him something.
The jamoke that felt the world... Oh, which...
Yeah, the guy who stole the beer from Richards.
Oh, yeah. So, this kid...
I'm
in our local watering hole. I'm going back and forth. I'm having a few drinks, having fun. So I'm sitting there, and beers keep ending up on the table. So I'm not paying attention. I hear the cooler closing behind me, but that's where the busboy usually goes to.
Yeah, he's in there on and out. Yeah. I'm familiar with the place.
So then all of a sudden, I go outside, start talking to two random people on the street, just BSing with them. And so I'm like, okay, I got to go cross the street, get cash. And they're like, yeah, you, the group that I was with is like, yeah, we've all been kicked out of Richards. I'm like, what do you mean?
Who got kicked out of Richards?
Well, I guess the kid was stealing the fucking beers out of the cooler.
Oh, what a cock sucker.
As if beers there aren't already cheap.
Yeah, they're like $2.
Yeah.
That's right by the table. How can he steal anything out of there? You can't even get by.
Were we sitting at our table when this happened?
Yeah. So, and...
You guys didn't spot this?
I was hoping that they didn't associate me with him. I was really hoping. But you never know, so I guess we got permanently banned.
Then why don't you go back inside?
Because I didn't know really what was happening at that point.
Yeah, you don't want to mess around.
I was waiting to get a cab to go on to the next venue.
That late.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about how this gentleman got a part of be a member of the group here? Because obviously somebody's not screening friends before bringing them along.
It's our dear friend Fricano's friend.
Oh,
who came in from out of town, was a little tipsy, and I thought he was trying to be funny, not realizing that this is a frequent.
You know what? I'd also like to know, first off, who the fuck didn't stop him from doing this? Because somebody at our table knew.
Somebody had to.
I feel like Fricano might have known.
I was hoping. I'm just thinking like, okay, I'm not thinking the kid.
I'm going to be honest. If I was at fucking Richards and some fucking asshole that we were with goes into their bar, goes into their freezer, I'm going to lock him in there and bash his head against the wall. I mean, what kind of idiot move is that? You don't go to a bar.
It's not an expensive bar.
No.
And it's a bar that takes care of us. We're in there all the time.
Yep. It's like our second home.
It's a
freaking respect issue.
It is. Thank you, Alex. It is. Kind of like, why are you on the microphone? That's a very disrespectful issue.
You know, I'm just going to throw this out here.
Matt told me to come on. Take it easy.
I don't think he knows, does he?
Yeah, he knows.
Okay.
When you vouch for somebody and you bring them out to do that whole thing, we go to our spots and you fuck up, I think that person should take responsibility.
He should take responsibility.
Yeah, well, he don't live here, so...
Well, he's not the only one. I think...
I bet he's from Milwaukee.
Yeah, we're going to have to... No.
What kind of moron does
Indiana? Oh, I knew that.
I don't know. I don't know what compelled him to do that.
Dude, was he like a drinker?
Well, no. When I was walking up, I was kind of like, oh yeah, we got kicked out. And I'm thinking, oh, it's closing time. That's why we got tossed out. Not realizing what really happened. But fuck it, either here.
First of all, that door to get into the fridge is huge. How can you just open that?
Well,
you know what I mean.
Like in the hallway. It is what it is at this point. Oh. Another interesting fact, I need to help me find out from you if you know who the alderman is for that area right over there by Richards.
Walter Burnett, I think.
Okay. Because a friend of mine went to see him about getting a liquor license, and I have an interesting story for you.
Oh, yeah. Those are very hard to obtain nowadays.
Yeah.
Oh, so, Alex points out like he runs the game. So.
So who's your dad, new Alex?
Nobody.
Thank you.
And you hear Matt talk. Let me take the podcast in the bathroom.
How long do these
cords reach?
really. So Matt, how's it going? Matt's in the bathroom right now.
What kind of host does that?
I don't know. We're currently losing a lot of listeners.
Usually they just go sit there and play Bye Bye Miss American Pie. They can go out and have a smoke, take a dump, do what they got to do. But this kid just got the left.
Yeah.
When Caesar coming on the thing, right? Anyway.
Hang on.
Let's see.
Is there a guest calling in yet?
Wait, hey, what can we do with Matt Aaron's Facebook account right now? Let's post some stuff.
Should we post something on Matt's Facebook wall?
Like, just sitting in the bathroom?
We should post a bunch of stuff supporting the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
He'd lose all his friends.
GOP.org or whatever their thing is.
GOP, what exactly?
Grand Old Party.
What?
Grand Old Party.
That's the GOP.
The Republicans, yeah. Grand Old Party.
What are the Democrats?
The Democrats.
Other than a donkey.
No, it's just Democrats.
Where the hell did that come up from?
I have no idea. Actually, that'd be... Google...
An elephant and a donkey? What the hell is that all about?
I have no idea. One's a jackass, one's a moving slow piece of shit. Who the fuck is the both ass?
I'm not going to lie. I mean, not that this is any participation to the actual different parties, but I think I'd rather be an elephant than a donkey.
New TV shows that you've watched recently?
None.
Really?
I don't watch TV.
I started watching The Suits.
I kind of into it, just probably I'm biased because being in law school. So
well, hold on. What is Suits? What is
Suits?
It?
Is basically it's this law firm, and this kid gets into a law firm. He has a photographic memory.
Oh,
but
does he actually have a photographic memory? Or is he taking it?
And Matthew Aaron is
Matt,
back
go,
on.
Close
He's
that
back.
Door. Matt, close that door.
Hang on. Because
last time when Matt, Alex went in or you, it just wafted around.
Why would you leave the door open?
Matt's closing the door. You're a sick person.
No, you need to go get some.
You go take a dump and then you
leave.
No, you turn the fan on. You don't just leave the door open.
It's like a gas chamber down here.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I don't know if we lost James or something like that. And we had some phone listeners, and we lost them, too. That good?
Well, I don't want to talk about it. We didn't really care.
Was it that good?
You're the one sitting in front of the computer.
Hey, man, we don't prepare for this thing like you do.
No, neither do I.
Me and
Whoa.
Matt are in our normal conversation.
Calm down on the word prepare. That's like Caesar using the word produce. All right. I'm just kidding. Joke.
I come down this
Caesar's
and
great.
I see Matt sitting here in the dark. Yeah. It's weird, actually.
Why is it weird?
It's just frightening. Why are you out of breath after taking a shit?
You have no
what
idea.
What is wrong with you?
That was
this one of those poops
it's
where
from,
it stretches your asshole?
That was Lee's.
Whoa.
No, it was whey liquid five.
You've had a few of
it was liquefied.
Ones where you hold it in.
No. It was one of those that burned really bad.
It burned?
Oh, the hot hole, as Pat calls it.
Yeah, the Pat calls every shit the hot hole, which makes me really worry about his intestinal.
No, he's got a bad.
No,
he eats and has to go to the bathroom. It's weird.
Yeah. He's got IBS probably. So I'm guessing James Hurston's not going to be calling in then.
Is he on?
I'm just going to roll the dice after this conversation. He's probably not calling.
Pat, who's DiStefano? He's already listening.
Tobias?
No, he's not. Caesar's texting me. What do you mind your own beeswax?
Look, he gets upset because like no one else can go by that screen. No, nope. Really see what's going on.
No. Nope. Nah, I should have sent a message.
We should have done some.
Oh,
dude, this now it just sounds like you grunting.
I heard. Oh, by the way, I hear we're having some brutal storms.
Is it supposed to be the night?
That's what I hear.
Yeah, how does it go, Lenny? It's gonna rain.
It's gonna rain.
Did you like that? Family Guy?
Well, no, I thought that was. I love Family Guy. I really do. And I thought, what's the weather out, Ollie? It's gonna rain. Thanks, Ollie. I'm just like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now we go to Asian Reporter Trisha Takanawa.
Hello.
That show just hits. That show, I love it.
You love it.
And did you see Ted yet, Mike?
Yeah, I saw it.
How'd you think it was?
To be honest with you, I thought the first half was better than the second half. The second half kind of reminded me of a Disney movie with swear words.
A little too cutesy for you, the second half?
Yeah, the second half was kind of like a Disney movie with swear words.
Where they kind of grew apart and grow back together.
Yeah.
May I say, I love Ted.
I loved it. I loved it. I laughed my ass off.
Beginning then, Lenny and I had to be the oldest guys there. You're younger, Luis.
No, as a matter
first of all, Luis, I also meant brains-wise, we were the oldest guys there, okay?
No, but the issue
and
is,
we still loved it.
I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm just saying if I had to choose, the first half was better than
the second
half.
You know, one of the other things, though, about Family Guy in general, if you're not intellectual or somewhat smart, you miss a lot of the shit in that show.
Yeah.
Or even on pop culture. You miss a lot.
I know. If you are not as smart as me, per se, or you, you're in trouble.
It's like when you watch something as a kid and you don't know why it's funny.
Right. Like Ghostbusters growing up. That was a dirty movie, a few of those scenes.
Yeah.
And now I appreciate it even more.
Well,
all right,
see,
now,
Ghostbusters is a great movie because every year you got older, you kept watching it,
yeah,
and you appreciated it for new things.
Yeah.
Now, Pat said James Hurston was supposed to call in by now, but he has a backup number. Now, here's the question. Has James heard content on the show and decided not to be a part of the show?
You know,
or like I have to roll the dice by using this backup number here.
What's the backup number?
Why would he?
It's his purse.
Here's the deal. I don't think anybody. I don't think we've done anything that would keep anybody from listening to the show.
Anybody? Or, no, but let's face it.
Well, most political analysts, not named Len Kanata, would not want to be involved with such.
You know what? I would
honesty. Some honesty. You know what? You'd be like, what's his face from San Francisco? What's the guy's name? No, not the
son.
San Francisco.
Oh.
Sanford and Son.
Like,
who's the lieutenant governor of California now?
Oh, not Barbara Boxer.
No, not Boxer.
Yeah, he's gone.
Lieutenant governor of California. Gavin Newsom.
Okay.
You're not him. He's way better looking than you. But
yeah, you know what? That's in the eye of the beholder, pal.
And I'm the beholder on that one.
And you behold very. Ooh, what is this?
Ooh, is that crab legs?
This is
king crab legs.
Where? Where could you get this?
I think it's in.
Hey, once again, people, radio show. Radio show, Momos. So if you're going to talk about crab legs that no one can see, at least tell them where they can get great crab legs they can't see.
Yeah, he just shows me a random picture, and I'm like, oh, we're going to have that tonight?
Do I call James Hurston, though?
Yes, call him. He's supposed to be on the show. I don't know what you're flipping out about.
I don't know. He's not
to call him.
He's not calling us. I'm going
to
call him.
You probably forgot.
Oh, Tobias says he thinks I was supposed to call him. Producer
Thanks
of the minute.
Thanks for letting us know, Pat.
Three mistakes, Pat, in a month.
Hey, we've been waiting for you to call in.
You know he's not. Whoa, that was a pickup and a hang-up.
That was a pickup and a hang-up, yeah.
That was a pickup and a hang-up. How do we feel? Mr. Hurston not like the content?
I think he feels too liberal-biased.
Oh. You think he heard some of our leanings?
No, but at the same time,
that was a pickup and a hang-up.
Outsourcing as well.
So
you
am
think,
I.
You think so?
I'm really interested in this.
Can we call one more time? I didn't hear it the first time.
Come on, one more time.
Let's call one more time.
We're not going to bet.
You know what? I've always hated rejection in life. and the fact that we're doing it for all these listeners, it gives me a little confidence to go up and ask a girl on a date now. I've been rejected from a lot of people.
All right, I'm gonna call one more time.
I don't think we're being rejected.
I'm going to call one more time. It hurts me. Down here. It's a little too Beavis and Butt-heady for him.
Should we hang?
Hello?
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 Hello, is this Mr. Herson? James Herson?
Speaking, yes.
Yes. This is Matthew Aaron of the Matthew Aaron Show. We were supposed to talk this evening.
Yeah, I'm going to change phones and then we can talk, okay? It'll be about 20 seconds.
Cool. He's going to change phones. I'm anticipating. So, you know. No, but once again, James Herson's joining us. He's a best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author, commentator, media analyst, and law professor at Trinity. Is one of the schools.
I think Trinity Law School.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. You may have seen the Wiley Factor or the Glenn Beck Show or Hardball with Chris Matthews. James is going to be joining us. I want to talk about his two articles that he wrote in the last week. I think they're very interesting.
I think it's good to have a little diversity on the show with a guest like this. I'm actually pretty excited to hear the viewpoints and you know, things that he can bring up in discussion.
Yeah, it's better than having actors on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Almost
tend
to be very liberal.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it's just a nice diversity to have a different kinds of guests on.
Yeah.
I agree, too.
I agree. Notice how
Hi,
mature.
Guys.
Oh, Mr. Herson, how you doing?
Good.
Mr. Herson,
I was just listening to your intro.
Oh, thank you. Mikey, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Michael Terzum.
Lenny Cannata, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
Good.
Hey,
I wanted to...
You broadcast out of Chicago?
Yes.
It's my hometown.
Is it?
Oh, there.
Sure.
Well.
I still have a soft spot for the sports teams, you know, even though I've been away for a long time.
Yes, sir.
How long were you in Chicago?
I was born there. I went to high school there. I went to college there. I've been there long. I was there a long time.
Very nice.
Which high schools and colleges, if I may ask?
I went to Lane Tech High School.
Oh, all right.
When it was next to Riverview.
Oh, Riverview.
Yeah, yeah. I went to Northeastern.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. So he's a true blue Chicagoan,
yeah, no,
Lane
he
Tech.
No, I mean, I grew up in the city.
Lane Tech, that's as city as you get. So that's
yeah.
Nice.
Right.
So, you know, Lenny was curious. He wanted to know about your whole upbringing and everything with education, right? You wanted to know about his...
Well, I was reading your bio. I couldn't find where you went to law school. Because I know you teach at Trinity.
Right.
Right.
I was just curious where you went to law school. You didn't go to law school in Chicago, though, right?
No, I did not go to law school in Chicago. I went to a law school, Northrop Law School, which is actually located in Texas now.
Okay. So what I wanted to talk to you about first was you wrote this column about film in 4D, which I found very interesting. Can you expand for us, for our listeners, what you talk about in that column? Basically, you're talking about how... the movie-going experience is going to become very interactive.
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, you know, Hollywood is happy about 3D, and the main reason they're happy about it is it adds an additional premium to the ticket prices. So the grosses are higher, but the audience has not really grown. So that's... They look at that, and now, of course, they see the technology progressing so that people can emulate 3D experience at home. So that's what Hollywood is in dire fear. The movie business is in dire fear of following the path that the music business had, which devastated basically the music business because of technology primarily and not changing their business model. So a lot of people are very excited about this 4D, which isn't a new idea. And by the way, we have to apologize to physicists because they would, if we're saying 4D, you know, someone that studies quantum physics is going to think they go into a movie theater and time travel.
Right.
That isn't what this is about. It's really about physical effects that are synchronized with images on the screen. So it's a very old idea, and I mentioned in my piece, you know, it goes back even before the 60s, but in the 60s there was smell-o-vision, in the 70s there was the earthquake movie where the room shook. And so this idea, and we see the physical effects in full bloom at theme parks across the country, particularly at California Adventure that's next to Disneyland out here in Southern California, but in other places. So what we have now is real sophisticated computer software that can run hardware and pinpoint the exact moment when a smell or a moving seat or a fog machine or a strobe light goes off, and they're calling this 4D, but that's the technology that's being used, and it's already in prototype theaters. At the theme parks, you know, they just used it to create an amusement park ride, the equivalent of a pure adrenaline roller coaster ride. And what we're talking about here are full-blown feature films made with all the artistic savvy that Hollywood can bring. So they're doing it with films that have already been released as 3D films, like Avatar, Prometheus, one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And there's going to be a couple of hundred of these theaters built over the next few years across the United States.
So they're going to be using like Avatar and Pirates of the Caribbean, and like it's going to be a full interactive movie now?
Well,
once the technology's in theaters, it will be movies that will be released in the future that will have this programming in them beyond 3D, so that you would watch, let's just say that they did an Iron Man reboot in a few years, which is likely, by the way they're rebooting things. And so when there's an explosion on the screen, you smell gunpowder. When there's a chase scene, your seat moves to simulate G's by moving you on an angle. When there's a sort of scary scene where there's mist in the air, you know, this real fog surrounds you. That sort of thing is what they're thinking about doing, and adding more money to the ticket price, so we'd be getting closer to going to a Cubs game.
Yeah, that's why I was going to ask you, because maybe it's a Chicagoan in me, but it sounds, the first thing I hear is money.
It's all about, the whole thing is about money, because you know, the idea is to increase the grosses, number one, and number two, to create an experience in the theater so that you can't emulate it easy at home. Although, you know, we could come to your house, pick up the seat, have a bunch of buddies, pick up the seat, move it around, squirt you at the right time, but it wouldn't quite be the same experience. And so Hollywood likes that, and the theater owners. So this is really being driven by the studios and the theater owners. As a matter of fact, this company that has developed the cutting-edge technology is from South Korea. They are the largest theater owner in Asia. And in this deal that they've put together for the 200 theaters to start with, many of the theaters are chipping in half of the $2 million that it costs to equip a theater with what is being called 4D. And so they have like a... they call it a lab, but right in the heart of Hollywood, near Hollywood and Vine, they have a lab there, this company, the CJ Group, where they're giving people a sample of this, and they're selling it to the studios. And so, but it's a lot of people are very excited about it, and when I think about it objectively, I think it'll work. I think it'll work in the same way 3D worked. In other words, you know, they advertise it, they come up with this 4D name, and they say, you know, the next sequel or reboot or remake of a television show. In other words, you know, things that involve very little creativity, but a lot less risk, The next one that comes out, they appeal to a younger demographic that wants a cheap date, and it still is going to be cheaper. Even they're projecting an additional $8
now,
for the 4D experience.
Now, let me ask you this. Okay. This leads me into another column you wrote, because you're talking about how this technology for this 4D film, and by the way, why would this work, this technology for the 4D film, when Smell-O-Vision and the Earthquake movie, those didn't necessarily work that well?
Well, the difference is, and actually, you know, in each case, I would say, these were gimmicks. There was a guy in the 50s named William Castle, who brought a lot of people to the theater. Of course, he didn't have TV to compete with as much, with all kinds of gimmicks. He had one called the Tingler, where you actually got a very small electric shock at certain times in your seat. Earthquake, as I mentioned, they had kind of like the kind of speakers that someone annoys you with in a car next to you. When they've installed these really big bass speakers, you feel your car shaking. During the quake scenes, the theater shook so hard the plaster was falling down. In the legendary Chinese theater, they had to put up a safety net. So these things did work, but they were always like one part of it. Even the movie Fast and Furious, the first one, had, was it 100 or a couple hundred theaters that were equipped with moving seats. But there's never been a movie theater feature film experience that combined all of this using modern computer technology. And that's what the difference. And I think, you know, we live in an era now where when something is a positive entertainment experience, we don't have word of mouth anymore. We have a social media instead. So it travels like lightning. And so when something is good, like, for example, The Dark Knight, which is coming out this week, is going to do real, real well because it's a really great flick and people are going to communicate. They'll be in the theater tweeting and texting and Facebooking, and then everyone's going to find out. Well, it's the same thing in theory will happen with 4D technology and already has overseas in Thailand, South Korea, and Mexico. So, it's the fact that we've changed as a society where we're more... we need entertainment more than ever, and we're looking for new experiences. And the other thing is that it's combining all these other sensory experiences with modern software that allows it to be much more extensively used and pinpointed.
Now, James, you brought up The Dark Knight Rises. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen the whole thing, but I've seen... you know, enough pieces of it, and I just think Chris Nolan's one of the best filmmakers. He's certainly one of the best modern. He may be one of the best of all time, and the source material for the film is The Tale of Two Cities, and it's interesting. It's not going to be in 3D. Isn't that interesting?
He doesn't like 3D. As a film critic, do you like 3D?
No, I mean, I don't like 3D or 4D myself. I mean, I don't, but I'm fascinated with this 4D idea from the point of view of what a good filmmaker who sets out to use it in an artistic way could do in terms of, so it fascinates me. And 3D is a legitimate technology, and it can be used in a tasteful way and really enhance a film. I think, you know, when it first, right after Avatar, it was getting ridiculous, like all these films that had been shot in 2D were then converted, and they really were, people didn't like it because they could tell they were being had. And, you know, there were these rumors that all these new sequels that made no sense, like an Adam Sandler film in 3D or a Dumb and Dumber sequel in 3D, you know, it just got ridiculous. But I think they're legitimate technology, but I think ultimately, if you look at film as a quasi art form or an art form, it's the fundamentals that make a movie great. It's the story, it's the universe that the story takes place in, it's the development of the characters. It's the same thing that makes Greek tragedies what they are, Shakespeare plays what they are, and brilliant novels what they are. And those are the things ultimately, in the end, that you know that make something an extraordinary work of entertainment. But it's nice, you know, like it's similar. You ask somebody about, say, computer-generated effects, so-called CGI. What a great tool that is. But it's gotten to the point it's so overused that now I really believe audiences are getting bored with the constant morphing from this to that and these effects that are too easy now. Because it wasn't like the old days when they had to actually shoot them in stop time or come up with makeup artists to create them. Within the advent of the green screen, special effects have gotten cheap. And there have been movies that where there wasn't much of a story. And the funny thing is, critics would say, well, that film was like a roller coaster ride. Well, now they're really going to be able to say that.
Yeah, it's going to cost as much. Mike, you got a question for James. What's up?
Yeah, you know, I kind of like this idea of the 4D in the sense of them striving for something that I can't get at home, which does have a more of appeal to motivate people to go to the theaters. But other than maybe Avatar, my experience with a lot of recent 3D movies, whether it be the Avengers or the new Spider-Man movie, they don't seem very 3D. Are they going to, before they go to the straight up to the 4D technology, do you think they're going to improve it all on the actual 3D movie? So you go there and it's like, wow, it's 3D. Because, you know, when I go to the Universal Studios or some of the, you know, amusement parks out there and go to their 3D, you know, movies or rides, if you will, it is noticeable and you feel like you're a part of something. And then in the movie theaters, it's just not there.
Well, I guess it depends. Sometimes it depends on the theater and whether it's an IMAX theater or not. And so, you know, but you're right. I mean, some of the movies, it's like, there's plenty of movies I enjoyed it much more in watching it in 2D. I found the 3D just a distraction and it a gimmick. And but I do think they'll probably get better at it. And I, you know, you hit on something there. You know, the idea of bringing people into theaters. I think the theater experience is special and magical for many films because you're experiencing the movie along with others, you hear their reaction. That's part of the entertainment to me. That's why, you know, for example, there's the cult following for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is kind of a 4D event that they create themselves. But it's the audience getting involved, interacting with the screen. A good comedy, it's really much more fun in the theater if people are laughing so hard they're crying and they're all around you. And so I like the idea of saving the movie theaters and the movie theater experience. You know, and so there's a number of different experiments they're trying, and this is one of them. You know, another one of these upscale theaters where they turn them into like a dinner theater. They serve alcohol. They have waiters and waitresses, and it's like, and they're more expensive. And you have a more expensive experience at those theaters. Maybe they'll combine it, have a dinner theater with 4D, you know, and then you get water all over your food. That way, or it shakes your food and it spills on your, I don't know. Yeah, but the idea is good to save the theater experience, in my opinion.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, James, and I want to get to one of your books in a moment as well. And I want to get to the second article you wrote, too. But, you know, You've been acquaintances with Mel Gibson throughout the years. I'm a big fan of his, and I was wondering, from your point of view as a film critic, as someone who's very very much in the know in Hollywood, how is Mel going to turn his career around? What does he have to do?
Well, I that's a very good question, and I have to say I'm a little too close to Mel personally to know. And I'm very biased because I just think I think he's gotten a terrible shake here in the sense because the person of Mel Gibson is a generous, very good person, and he stayed sober for something like 20 years, a recovering addict, and had a terrible fall, we say falling off the wagon. But he's an extremely talented individual with a tremendous instinct for the medium of film, and it seems as though that it will be if his career manifests itself in a big way like it did before. It's probably going to be in producing and directing like he did with The Passion of the Christ and Apocalypto, which both were very big successes, Apocalypto being a success even after he had had some of his bad PR. And you can even still see, I mean, he's got this movie, this direct-to-DVD movie, which is marketed with two different titles, and one of them is Get the Gringo.
Gringo, yeah.
And another one is How I Spent My Summer Vacation. And it's really, you know, it's the old action-oriented Mel Gibson, who throughout the movie is having his life threatened, getting beaten to a pulp. But there's this comedic aspect. So I don't know if he's ever going to be, you know, he had one time, just a few years ago, he was the biggest star in Hollywood. And, at his age and with the problems he's had, probably not at that level, but I think he has contributions to the medium that he's going to give. And I hope that he's able to stay out of trouble and, you know, kind of turn his life in a different direction.
James, I'm going to ask you a question that may be a little unfair, though. If Mel Gibson was a liberal, if Mel Gibson was a Democrat, would there be as much of a, I don't want to say witch hunt, but do you think there'd be as much press about Mel and his exploits?
You know, in the case of Mel, to be fair, I mean, his stature was so high, and there's a Schadenfreude in the public, a Schadenfreude effect, where there's great joy in bringing down somebody who's very successful. And in when somebody has problems, who has appeared to live the perfect life, so to speak, regardless of their politics, almost anybody, and anyone that's been in a scandal, maybe most recently we could say there was a fascination. The public was watching Charlie Sheen sort of self-destruct right in front of us. And I think it's a similar kind of thing. I think what's unfortunate is that, you know, this, a lot of what happened to Mel Gibson was, in many cases, was people had an animus against him because they felt like it was unforgivable that he made that movie, The Passion of the Christ, because they perceived it as something that had bigotry in it or whatever, which really wasn't the case. And so there was a little of that in the press, a little vitriol, extra vitriol for him. But I think when it comes to celebrity reporting, there's just this incredible scrutiny because the public is celebrity obsessed, and anybody that has scandals, it becomes viral. I mean, case in point, Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
Who nobody really, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't really know Lindsay Lohan's politics, but I don't think probably it would help her if she really embraced some really good liberal causes, because that can help, you know, if she posed for PETA and she came out for radical environmentalism and of course, you know, for same-sex marriage. I mean, that kind of stuff can help. A bit, but I still think, you know, the TMZs of the world are pretty much apolitical, and the various entertainment outlets that are out there copying TMZ, and they're just trying to break stories about celebrities, and usually they're stories about celebrities in trouble.
Yeah, you know, and then I think Mel turned it around. Mel's a really talented guy, and he knows how to make great movies, and he will. But what I'm more concerned about is why is it that Hollywood is giving Obama all this money, President Obama, when, like you wrote in this week's article, you wrote how Hollywood's outsourcing jobs. What is Barack Obama doing for Hollywood?
Well, that's a real good question. Up until he had his evolutionary thought on same-sex marriage, There was a lot of discontent in Hollywood. The president basically turned his back on Hollywood when the SOPA and PIPA bills, which were anti-piracy bills that Silicon Valley was at odds with Hollywood over, the president turned his back on Hollywood, and Christopher Dodd, former senator, who's the head of the Motion Picture Association, threatened the president that the money would be cut off.
Yeah.
And the president took a number of actions at that time, including appointing a woman named Nicole Advent, who had been a bundler, and others, to try to shore up Hollywood. But the biggest thing he did was right before the George Clooney campaign dinner,
yeah,
he announced, you know, his switch on same-sex marriage, which was treated in Hollywood as his greatest accomplishment.
Yeah.
Some words that he said that had no legal import whatsoever, and the money started to flow even more to a greater accelerative level than it had before. But one thing about Hollywood, it's a place, you know, not only is it the entertainment capital of the world, it's the hypocrisy capital of the world, because this is a place, for example, I mentioned environmentalism. I mean, with a few exceptions, and I've mentioned a couple, is Ed Begley Jr., Daryl Hannah, who are literally living a green lifestyle for real.
Right.
Majority of people in Hollywood, both executives and celebrities, are phony in the sense that they're out there preaching this lifestyle that eliminates a big carbon footprint when they all have massive carbon footprints, the entertainment business being the second largest polluter in Southern California next to oil. And the entertainment business, they actually really tell people, my company is carbon neutral because I bought these indulgences from Al Gore's company called a carbon offset, which is a phony piece of paper right out of the Wizard of Oz that says, you know, well, we're going to plant these trees in the third world to offset your pollution on your movie sets. And it's, you know, it's ridiculous. And then, of course, you know, it's like the late Norman Lear, together with Arianna Huffington, made an ad to try to make you feel guilty if you drove an SUV, saying you're supporting terrorists. But the late Norman Lear had a 30,000-square-foot air-conditioned garage with I don't know how many scores of cars in it that basically had a bigger carbon footprint than 90% of Americans do in their homes and cars and everything else. And then, you know, John Travolta pilots a commuter jet to get places. I mean, it's really a crazy place. These people come in their private jets to a big event, big awards event, and then they're seen being dropped off by Priuses. It's a funny place. But at the same time, and I mentioned my article where the biggest bundlers in Hollywood, and three I mentioned, Jeffrey Katzenberg, Jeffrey Immelt, and Bob Iger, big supporters of Barack Obama in Hollywood, are giving this huge amounts of money. Jeffrey Katzenberg wrote one of the first checks to the Obama Super PAC, $2 million, and Jeffrey Katzenberg, being the head of DreamWorks, knows a lot about outsourcing, that same outsourcing that the Obama campaign is using to define Mitt Romney. You know, he ships those jobs overseas, and Jeffrey Katzenberg is shipping jobs overseas in the form of animators to both India and China, setting up these partnerships in India and China where they have cheaper animators. And it's not the fact of doing that that bothers me. It's the hypocrisy of the Obama administration cashing the checks and attacking over that issue. And I guess I would argue that the Obama administration, they're not outsourcing jobs. They're making them vanish and into thin air. You know, they're taking taxpayer money and creating companies that, you know, they want to create jobs, I suppose, but the Solyndras and the companies like Solyndra, they end up having zero jobs because they go bankrupt, and they take the resources and go bankrupt. So in the case of Bob Iger, the head of Disney, the largest entertainment corporation in the world, and probably the best in terms of animation and animation technology and their basically research and development in that area and success in that area. Well, they have a partnership in China that, to sort of set up a animation service company and assist them with their highly developed animation technology, which the Chinese will steal. And it's this is Bob Iger, who just recently posed with Michelle Obama at a press conference where he pledged that Disney would no longer take ads from companies that sell, quote, junk food, close quote.
You know,
I called it my piece, you know, Michelle Obama's Eat As I Say, Not As I Do campaign. By the way, when Bob Iger did that, he was essentially breaching his duty to the shareholders of Disney because he's turning away business. And that's right. Not his job. His job is to create more business and to create profits for his shareholders. But that's because Bob Iger already knows he's going to leave Disney.
So what is the future? And by the way, I want to plug a couple of your books real quick. Hollywood Nation. There's the Tales from the Left Coast and Hollywood Nation, Tales from the Left Coast. Are there any other books that I'm getting, James?
No, those are good.
Those are good.
I do have some old ones, but those are great, those two.
I do know.
You find them, by the way, they're hidden in the back of the bookstore.
Well, I live in L.A. most of the time. I'm in Chicago to visit right now, but in L.A., I can tell you, I've been to a bunch of celebrities' houses. I won't say who, and your books are on the shelves. They may be secret Republicans out there, but they're Republicans that are out there in Hollywood.
You know, there are actually, there's a pretty healthy group of people, and if you hang out in L.A., you probably know about these groups. But there are more than one, and they're almost like support groups for alcoholics, where people who are right of center get together, who've been hiding, you know, what Charlton Heston used to call a closet conservative. Because of the fact is, it's a very difficult business. Any glamour business is very difficult, but the film business is one of the most difficult. And it makes it hard on you and hurts your social life and your career if you're an out-of-the-closet non-liberal. And I say non-liberal because even libertarians, even independents, it's just better to say nothing or to toe the liberal line if you're young and trying to break in.
I'm used to it. It's like being a Republican in Chicago. They don't fly. Right, Lenny?
It's pressure.
Well, I understand Mayor Emanuel has made that illegal.
Yeah, I think he has made it illegal. You can't be Republican in Chicago anymore, can you, Mikey?
I guess not.
No. Well, Mikey still does. Mikey still does. Mikey, what do you think about all this, honestly? Do you, like, when you listen to this and when you hear about this, there's a liberal and a conservative agenda in Hollywood, a business where they make movies and TV shows. And, you know, why does it matter? Why does it matter? Why does politics matter so much out there? And I'll be honest about something. I actually feel like the conservatives are fighting back from the liberals. I do believe the liberals started that whole war out there when it comes to politics mattering in their business. And I think conservatives are just sticking up for themselves now. I don't think it's a conservative problem. But
well, I'll tell you one real good manifestation of that. There is a man named Gerald Mullen who is actually Steven Spielberg's production partner. I mean, he did Jurassic Park, Schindler's List. Big films, and there's a film that just is about to come out in a small release in Texas that is called Obama 2016, and it's Dinesh D'Souza is really the star of the movie. It's a documentary, and it's just brilliantly made. It's one of the best conservative documentaries that I've ever seen in terms of production value. And its pacing and its rhythm, and you know, it's yeah, it really bypasses the Hollywood infrastructure when something like that comes out. But that was true of The Passion of the Christ, which some claimed was a right of center approach to the movie. But The Blind Side, the movie where Sandra Bullock won an Oscar,
yeah,
that got turned down by every studio. That got even turned down. Julia Roberts turned down the lead. Sandra Bullock had to take a pay cut to make it happen, and the money didn't come from Hollywood. It came from Federal Express, and it was a little production company, actually a relative of the CEO of Federal Express was the filmmaker, and it ended up being a home run, but it was despite Hollywood. So I think the way the conservatives fight back is they bypass the Hollywood infrastructure, either by making an independent film or by making a film and getting their own distribution on the movie, or working together with a studio with something that has enough momentum and money that where the studio says, hey, maybe this makes business sense. Plus, the other thing about conservatism, good stories, the kind that resonate, that are compelling, are inherently conservative stories. They take place in a moral universe. They have a tension and resolution and a kind of formula plot line that I had mentioned earlier that you find in all good stories. You can go back to the Greek tragedies and Shakespeare, and you see the same formulaic kind of traditional notions, kind of like how Twilight and West Side Story and Romeo and Juliet, and we could just go on, the star-crossed lovers concept always reemerges because we're hardwired to resonate to that story. And so in that sense, you know, we get these edgy movies with no stories and no plots. We get these movies that are taking advantage of our better angels, the dark side of us, like these movies that celebrate torture, and you know what I'm talking about, that have very little plot. At the end of the day, they don't really have that magical quality that you find kind of running through narratives that are traditional. And I argue they're inherently conservative.
Okay. Well, Mikey has a question for you. Mikey.
Yeah, James, I always wondered because I couldn't figure this out. And what was Hollywood's problem with The Passion of the Christ? Was it just because it was a movie about Christians and that was... You know, I just don't understand what was their issue.
Well, it seems as though, you know, we look at the history of Hollywood and that Hollywood was founded by patriotic people who had this very top-down, structured studio system, and there wasn't a lot of freedom in that system for the creative types. The executives really controlled everything, and there was no competition. There was no television. And they owned all the movie theaters and the studio mechanism. And that was broken up by an antitrust case. And it changed the face of Hollywood and it changed the politics of Hollywood. So I think that when it comes to religion, in general, the rule in Hollywood is that traditional religion, orthodoxy, the kind of religion that says there's an absolute good and evil is looked upon as a threat. The perfect example of this kind of view is the amazing antipathy towards all religion that Bill Maher has. And I know Bill. And really what it comes down to, it's a very, very simple kind of psychology. Bill has a lifestyle that's inconsistent with traditional morals. And so when somebody claims that those traditional morals come from a sacred source, that makes Bill feel uncomfortable. And when he feels uncomfortable, then he hates the source of that made him feel uncomfortable. And many people in Hollywood are just like that. You made me feel bad. You make me feel guilty. And so you're judging me is what you usually get. Somehow that traditional religious notions are judgmental by their existence.
So, well,
and I felt like with The Passion of the Christ, that was part of the reaction, because The Passion of Christ viewed the death of Christ as something that was a miracle, that, you know, there was a resurrection that was going to follow, that it had to do with salvation. And it, so it justified and was embraced by fundamentalist evangelists, by people who practice Catholicism in a fundamental way. And Hollywood doesn't, when I say Hollywood, I'm saying generic Hollywood, generally, is a hedonistic place, and it doesn't fit, and they feel uncomfortable. Things like, okay, I want to get high with drugs, and I'd like to be able to just mess around. If my patron saint is Hugh Hefner, it's real hard for me to accept these Bible-thumping kind of people. And I think that's been a problem in the modern version of Hollywood. It wasn't a problem when Cecil B. DeMille made the Ten Commandments, or when they made King of Kings, or the traditional kind of movies.
So Hollywood hates feeling accountable, is basically what you're telling me.
In a sense, because you look at the films that, you know, for example, Only Hollywood Come Up With This. Its name is Verhoeven. I'm losing it. The guy that made Basic Instinct.
Yeah, Paul Verhoeven.
And RoboCop. He has written a book which says that, you know, not only that Jesus Christ was an ordinary human being, that he was the product of rape, that a Roman soldier raped the Virgin Mary. And he has gotten financing, and this is going to be adapted and made into a movie in theory. But the fact that someone would conceive of this when 80 to 90% of people in this country would find that offensive, is it shows the bubble that people in Hollywood are in. Because, like, they would never make a film like that about Muhammad. They would never make a film like that about Buddha. But they would do it about Jesus Christ, that because they see Christians as a boogeyman. And Norman Lear has helped that over the years with his People for the American Way. And every Democratic fundraiser basically goes into Hollywood and tells them, give me money, I'll stop the religious right from coming here. That's their pitch to get checks written. And it's working.
I find that all very, very interesting. James, I would hope we're wrapping up here, but I would hope you'd be able to join us again in the future. I had a very nice time talking to you. Very, very.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you very much.
You
can go to jameshurst.com, of course, and newsmax.com has the Left Coast Report. And thank you, James. And I hope you join us again soon. I'd like to keep talking about film.
And then, you know, sometime we'll talk about the Bears.
And yes,
and the Bulls and all of them.
Well, James,
and even the Cubs, who broke my heart since I was a little kid.
Yeah, get used to
that. Well, yeah, just switch over to the Sox by now, James. Come on.
You know what, though? It's good that the Cubs don't actually win it all, because there's a known maxim that if they did, it would be the end of the world.
James, is there a place that is must for you to eat at when you're in town?
You know, it used to be some those pizza places. I don't know if they're still there. Uno's and Due's, and yeah, there were
they're
some,
not
you know.
Good now.
But in any case, no, there's not anymore. Just places in on the West Coast.
When you're in town, we'll sneak into a good slice somewhere.
All right. Sounds good.
James, and we'll have you on. Okay, we're going into overtime because I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, I think that was good.
Well, I think his comments about, you know, these movie stars taking private jets and then getting dropped off by Priuses.
No, that's
bingo.
Right.
That's 100% true.
Yeah,
100% true.
No,
protect the environment while I go home in my you know, Rolls Royce Phantom that gets 8 miles of the gallon.
Yeah. Let's not BS here for the next couple minutes when we go into overtime. He said a lot of things that do make a lot of sense. Now, then there were some things that James said that I'm not necessarily agreeing with. such as what would he say about environmental radical environmentalists?
Well, I think there are some radical environmentalists. There are some people.
Well, of course, there's radicals everywhere.
Of course, and so then that.
But he called it radical environmentalism.
But when you said that, I didn't want to take it purely political. But that's something else needs to be addressed. Both parties have been hijacked by the radical element.
Yes. Well, that's why we need to have James back
on. Oh, yeah.
On. We need to have James back on. So. I'm even going to try to get James back on next week if I can.
Because
I want to keep talking
they're
about
banging. They're, a lot of the radical environment. They're holding back progression considerably.
The left is the Democratic Party is blowing the shit out of their left. Not their left. Blowing the shit out of, you know, the radical element. There's the extreme progressives and everything.
Yeah.
And then you got the right. Blows the shit out of the religious right.
It's thundering and lightning out, just for you guys who don't know.
Yeah, oh, it is,
so we
huh?
Might lose. Actually, want to go watch the storm?
No, we're okay. We'll go in a couple minutes. Okay. I want to keep talking about this. This is interesting to me.
No, I thought he was very informative. It was great. It's nice to talk to somebody who's not just throwing shit against the wall like Mr. Luisi over here.
It's not, and you know what? I am very, very for bringing on Republicans on the show. I'm all about it.
Absolutely.
I'm all about it. We've had a ton of, let's put it this way, we've had 105 Democrats on and 5 Republicans. So I don't mind that other list catching up.
I don't think you know it that's that left-sided or whatever you want to call it. I mean, how many people, do you have an interview process before they come on the show? Okay, and do you vote?
I do.
Republican or Democrat?
I told Michael Ian Black, if you're doing the show, you better be waving your donkey, all right? your monkey flag better be in full force.
Look.
But no, the hypocrisy thing, that really does piss the shit out of me.
I think it's...
Which thing?
Hypocrisy in
general. Oh, absolutely.
Well, the environmental thing's dead on.
The environmental thing, you know, even myself, I'm not a staunch environmentalist, but I do believe there is climate change.
Yeah.
And honestly, the sad thing is over the last 3 freaking weeks... I've been done.
You know,
plastic bag.
You know what I? Oh yeah, I know. I only read the paper too.
I start going into the strictly reusable containers.
You know why I really liked? You know why I really liked James? I'll tell you. I really liked James because even when he bashed liberals, we'll say. I don't even know if he was bashing liberals. He'd bash people that were against a certain whatever. He would give examples, like even when he said radical environmentalists, they called bullshit on a lot of Hollywood people.
Yeah.
He did say Ed Begley Jr. and Daryl Hannah. He goes, take them off the list, though. They legitimately live. He was only calling out people who are full of shit.
You're right.
So you got to give him credit on that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was here's the thing. I've just been watching a lot of MSNBC lately, and I watch it. And
well, soon it's not going to be. It's just going to be NBC, not long ago.
Right.
MSNBC.
And Mikey, I know how Mikey feels because, yeah, they got bought out again. And I said to Mikey, I go, like every night Mikey's over, I go, Rachel Maddow. He goes, turn it off. I go, okay. James the channel. All right. So I watched my MSNBC, but I got to tell you, I need to find a new news source because MSNBC has given it to me way too slanted, just like Fox News.
I cannot stand MSNBC. I cannot stand
CNN's MSNBC. Okay.
CNN, I will take day after
Here's
day.
Here's the problem
over.
I have with CNN. CNN has people on that seem to be very misinformed or lack informed.
When they ruled on the
I'm going to have to agree with you guys on that. I can't stand – like Keith Olbermann, I'm sorry, was just – way too far one-sided for me.
There were things that Keith Olbermann would say that I would agree with, but overall I was not a huge Keith Olbermann fan.
No, you know what? They're pundits. MSNBC and Fox is pundit after pundit after pundit.
Yeah.
On CNN, at least it has the air of some type of a news show.
Yeah.
Like, you actually have anchors.
Yeah.
Well, 1 hour pundit. Wolf Blitzer really isn't a pundit.
My favorite, no, you know what? My favorite news is CLTV because nobody's getting paid to be entertained.
CLTV.
They just report the news.
Just Chicago.
But my point is that
the world outside.
Is that Fox News, CNN, MSNBCs, any of these, C-SPAN, they're all paid entertainment. That's all they are.
You know what's crazy, by the way? Speaking of CLTV, WGN, the Tribune Company only makes money in one area. Right now.
WGN TV.
That's it. Tribune newspaper is a shitter. Tribune Company made something like $400 million.
Well, listen, is that because
Nobody buys.
They don't make money off that.
People don't buy newspapers.
No, they don't. Alex, I just read the reports today. They don't make any money except in TV, Tribune.
No, no newspapers.
You may be paying them. They're not making money.
Hey, look, are we having a conversation with Alex? You're going to be on the radio show. What are you doing?
Well, he said something goofy.
All right, if you're going to talk to somebody, go off the radio show and go talk to him.
Hey, he said something goofy, all right?
Good job, Mike. Let's talk about the soy sauce, hot mustard, and sweet.
He's
sour
saying, he's
I don't
want to
hear what he was
WGN,
saying.
WGN, he's saying the Tribune company
and he's wrong.
Must be
like,
money.
That's never happened before. Let's move on.
So yeah, much I'm for afraid, the Alex is wrong segment of the week.
I'm afraid to take a piss because I don't air it out yet.
Oh, it's aired out.
So,
it wasn't
look,
that bad.
Look. The point of everything is that the Tribune.
Wait, what were you two saying when I was yelling?
Lenny was trying to talk, and all I could hear was you.
Oh, so you rather heard Lenny than me?
Yeah, I would have.
Well, I see how
I'm
it
smiling,
is.
Smiling, Edman.
And why is that?
With a shit-eating grin.
Look at that.
Why is that? Why would you rather heard him than
he
me?
He feels like one of these.
I forgot what I was saying.
Either. Well, he doesn't even know what he's talking about.
No, I just forgot what I was saying.
We were talking about the Tribune and why they're not making money off newspapers.
The format, it's just because when you pick up the
it's
newspaper,
outdated.
It's outdated.
It's outdated.
I said this to you in a text. There's a 24-hour news cycle now, and it is fucking brutal.
Right. Well,
it is brutal.
You can get news anytime, anywhere.
Well, that's because some people consider
and people aren't
going to
pay for it anymore.
That aren't news.
I'll tell you what, though.
Okay, someone's watching the newsroom.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal that I do.
Oh.
I do think there's something special about sitting down with a Sunday paper at a cigar shop, having a cup of coffee, having the paper, having a stogie, and just relaxing in the morning. I love that.
No, but now what I do?
I don't, and I'm sorry, but I'm sorry, but an iPad doesn't replace. I mean, having some hard thing doesn't have to replace with the paper and the smell of the paper. It's not the same.
No, I know.
But I will tell you this: when you don't have that time to have that relaxing lifestyle, and you're in that go mode, and you really want the news, getting it emailed to your iPad or sent to your phone, and that's just.
It's like me. I'm kind of a news whore. I like news. I want to have.
You're just kind of a
see. I can't.
Well, no, I even save long form articles, like the articles written once a week or something. I save those. Read once a week.
Yeah.
So I'll have like 90, 100 pages that I have to read through on a Sunday or a Saturday.
See, I enjoy news from an informative standpoint, but when it comes to Fox News and MSNBC and any of these news networks, I hate it because it's such slanted. It's just slanted entertainment.
TV
it's not news. News should just be reporting true facts, not going, well, this is what happened, and this is what I think. You know, no, this is just what happened. That's all I want to know.
Well, here's the thing. They don't differentiate. They call it news channels, but none of these, like, it goes from, like, you know, this first 2 hours is this show, and this 2 hours is this show. It doesn't differentiate.
Plus, some of the people I don't like.
No, but for the
Martin
people,
Bashir.
It doesn't differentiate the people that are actual newscasters from pundits they're talking.
Tell me you don't like
Martin
Bashir.
You'll have, say, this one newscaster.
Yeah.
He reports, you know, three stories. Well, let's take it to these guys and find out what they think about these. So then you'll have a left-leaning and a right-leaning person start slamming back and forth, not really talk about the news. They're giving the opinion. So the person really lost the fucking news story.
Yeah, the news story's gone.
Yeah, he lost the news story.
Yeah, it makes no sense. You know, and getting back to something that, you know, James was talking about earlier, with the whole global liberal thing in Hollywood, I think, personally, and this is my feeling, so everybody out there in Hollywood wants to come after me for it, that's fine. But I think there's a lot of young people who want to be actors and actresses, and they see this bandwagon of how it's like an in-style thing to be a liberal, and it's like a hip thing to be for the environment. So they start doing all this thing, going into Hollywood so they can be a member of the parties and tell people about how liberal they are. I think that it's just
well,
like...
that, my friend, is Charles Darwin's theory of evolution and adaptability into your environment.
Yeah.
To survive.
Well, I don't know if it's...
So,
any
motherfucker that doesn't believe in evolution and Darwin could just go to Hollywood and understand why people become liberals.
But you know what I mean? Do you understand what
no,
I'm saying?
Absolutely. But when you're in a certain environment, people still need to fit in.
Oh, of course.
Because, and the fact that politics plays into it is... But Hollywood's always been left-leaning.
Well, it has that way.
At the same time,
by the way,
that left-leaning has permitted them to push the edge with certain movies.
Can I be honest?
Whether they're sexually explicit or whatever, whereas a more conservative... Like, if Hollywood was in Wyoming, it would have never became that way. Okay, it would have never became that way in a very conservative environment.
Sure,
so,
sure.
I'm sure they think they're smart. All right, listen, you twos.
Well,
I got a question for you.
Are you reading the Huffington Post?
No. No, I have a question for you. You and I believe Barack Obama's comments about small businesses were not about small businesses. We believe they were about infrastructure, correct? That's what we got from that comment. Some people of the Republican ilk believe that he was making comments about small businesses weren't created by you. They were created by everybody, including the government. Now, I'd like to think you and I are right, but I have a problem. My problem is, why hasn't the small business owners for Obama updated their website with any kind of retort about this whole thing?
There's an actual group,
Small Business Owners for Obama.
Well, it's because there's nobody in the group.
Yeah, they're all gone. They all shifted. They all left.
There's nobody in the group.
At the same time, you have to realize that's the point of the 24-hour news cycle. His speech was maybe about 3 minutes long.
Sure.
And you take a three-second soundbite and you convert it into a story.
Well, why didn't
Republicans
they?
Republicans do this.
Okay, I agree with you, Lenny, but if you and I are right, then how come they're not fighting back? Is it more the Democrats being pussies? Or, because, admit it, liberals are pussies. Liberals are pussies. They're pussies.
Horrible.
They're fucking vaginas. Okay? I don't mean vaginas. Pussies, I meant.
Yeah, they're,
same
they're,
difference.
They're
I like vaginas. anyway.
Except in politics. But why aren't the small business owners for Obama responding and defending him? I don't get it.
Well, you know what? Could you do me a favor and see if you can find the actual wording to what was said?
Yeah.
Because
I had it. I deleted it. I have it. I'll find it.
I mean, I get the general gist of it, but yeah. I've never actually heard. I don't know what the hell. Because look, like I said before, and then for our listeners out there, my personal feelings, I think campaigning is too long. All these shit-throwing matches that get started, whether it be Republican or Democrat, it makes everybody look like a bunch of stupid monkeys.
No,
okay?
I have the full quote. I'll wait for Lenny to get back to read it. But, look, the speech was in Virginia on Friday. Obama pushed his idea that businesses benefit from government investments in infrastructure like roads and bridges, okay? And he was trying to say how...
I don't want an opinion. I just want to actually
read.
No,
this is an opinion. This is what they're saying. I'm giving you their official. Their stance on it was they're going to show you how infrastructure and investing in infrastructure is going to help with tax cuts. Okay, so I'm going to read it. You ready?
Yeah, let's read it.
The other component real quick would be like student loans. Where'd you get the employees that are good?
I'm going to read it for Mikey. Mikey hasn't heard it. There are a lot of wealthy, successful Americans who agree with me because they want to give something back. No, they didn't. Look, if you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I work harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hardworking people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we have that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet so all the companies could make money off the internet. The point is that when we succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because we do things together. That's the quote.
Yeah, I can definitely see how some people feel the way they do.
Yeah, they well, I don't know if it's misconstrued.
I think when you have people that – all right, I'll liken it here. I'll make it very simple for you. Regardless of my personal political feelings, I think that in a lot of situations, when you have somebody that's hated, whether it be George Bush or whether it be Barack Obama, because I hope everybody doesn't forget the shit-throwing matches that were thrown at George Bush too. And sure. I think any president is going to have to put up with that. It's like when somebody comes in to buy a car, and they're so in tune to the fact that car salesmen are the biggest pieces of shit on the face of the earth. If we sneeze or fart or look at them the wrong way, they pull their guns out and are ready to blow our brains out.
Yep.
So I think that the comment that I see here, I think could have been ignorant in some ways, but I think his whole idea of what he was saying was is that I mean he really kind of went a little too far with it.
I gotta be honest with you about something though. Rereading the quote, I want you to tell me what was incorrect about it. What's wrong about it? Tell me what's wrong.
I think the people who have actually put the hard work in to build a business,
they didn't have help from anybody?
No, I'm sure everybody had help.
That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. That's the quote.
No,
I believe it.
What do you mean you don't believe it?
No,
I mean, Vito Luisi's never gotten help in his life to get
time,
where he's at.
Everyone wants to believe that they are...
Yeah, I don't care what everyone wants to believe.
The only thing that
they're self-sufficient.
Like they're candy cane. But the thing is, that feeling, you're taking away a good feeling.
But that's the point. And he says, the point is that when we succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because we do things together. What's wrong about that?
Yeah, I think everybody is responsible for their own success.
I agree with you. That's what he's saying as well with the individual initiative. But he is saying we all need to work together.
I mean, if you're saying that if I was on a fucking island by myself and there's nobody else there that I could build Walmart, then no, obviously that doesn't make any sense. Yes, I understand his point of an idea of what he's saying. I just think that, you know, even making a smart-ass remark like, oh, I hate it when all these business owners go around acting like they're so smart. I mean, actually, a lot of business owners are extremely intelligent people.
His quote was, I'm always struck by people, not small business owners. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. And all he's saying is, there are a lot of smart people out there. It's not just because you're so smart, and it's not just because you work the hardest. There's also help along the way.
Yeah, but I think a lot of those people, I think there's a lot of that helps available to a lot of people that don't know how to utilize it and to do it properly.
I think they're just ignorant. My dad, okay, you brought up my dad.
Or anybody. I'm asking anybody.
I'm just saying nobody, okay, my family didn't come from any money.
No one can hear you. You're not talking into a microphone.
My dad didn't get any help from anybody, okay?
He never had a teacher that taught him how to fucking do taxes?
He
popped out of a vagina and knew how to do fucking taxes.
Right, well Matt, here's, Luis, hold on a second. I hear what you're saying. Here's the problem. I agree exactly with that. But some of the comments that he...
I'm saying the wording is bad. The writing is bad.
Whoever let him say that should
but
be fired.
But the honesty of it is, all he is saying is, government jobs, such as teachers, such as police officers, such as firefighters, such as, what else he's talking about,
yes.
Road and work infrastructure workers. He's just saying, without those people who the government employ.
Yeah, but...
He's not wrong. Poorly written.
What he said was...
So we'll just agree it was poorly written.
Terribly out of line.
Poorly written, but we understand he's not saying, you didn't build this on your own. You didn't do this on your own. He very much says your individual initiative is the number one leading factor of your success. So...
Yeah, and look, and here's the deal. You know,
but I'm just saying these people are blowing it out of proportion,
of course,
Mikey.
Well, it's like I told you. It's the same thing like I told you with the car sales. I get it. I mean, in all reality, I mean, whether it be a Republican or Democrat or whoever, I really don't think any of these – anybody who's president is not an idiot, whether it be Bush or Bush Sr. or Clinton or Obama. These are not stupid people, okay? And they do have a certain understanding of what it takes. And I just think, again – you get all these morons that are just out there that are willing to just jump on any chance they get.
I mean, here's what some of my Republican friends are saying. You know, they say stuff like, now he's saying, when I said you didn't build that, I didn't say that. Okay, once again, you're taking things out of context. That's what Lenny was saying. It happens all the time. What, once a week in the news?
Yeah, no.
More?
That's the political spin. That's a political spin.
But now that you've heard the whole quote in context, which I know you read and stuff.
Into a week-long news cycle. And then springboard your other
idea. Are you with Mikey and I now that you know the whole context of the quote and everything? Just poorly written, but he didn't mean anything like you didn't build your business on your own.
It was very poorly written.
That's the first thing I thought of, though, by the way, when I read it the first time. I go, this is very poorly written. Which is not
like
his campaign.
They give him
I think they had a late night.
And they like briefed him fucking incorrectly.
I think they had a late night with the moonshine in Virginia.
Yeah,
moonshine and a pack of Newports.
And a pack of Newports in Virginia.
At the same time, he could have given a little bit more credit to the individual business.
And I totally understand what Alex was saying. I get what people are trying to say. But here's the thing. First of all, you guys are biased and you hate him. Okay? So you're just looking for some reason to fucking
and
hate
and the
him.
Same thing happened to Bush.
Same thing happened to definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Let's not even, bullshit about that, of course. But the thing is, there's nothing in this speech that's really that outlandish.
No, I think the only thing you got to come back to is I think the business owners can come back and say, well, you know what? Let's be realistic. If it wasn't for us as small business owners helping the economy go in this country, then sure. There'd be no need for a government. So how about that? If it wasn't for small business owners and business owners as an economy in this country, then there would be no government.
I know.
Because realistically, without an economy in a country, there's no point to have a government either.
You're absolutely right, though, about small business owners. Alex says they account for 80% is what you're saying? 80%.
Yeah, which is true. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. And,
at the same time, small business owners accounting for 80%, my biggest fear is the fact that we used to be the top manufacturer in the world.
We used to.
Okay. But the thing
we've
that
outsourced
really
those jobs.
A little bit of a bounce
did
back
you miss the James Hirsch interview?
No. But the thing that literally drove a little bit of a bounce back in the economy was our manufacturing coming back.
Yeah.
So if small businesses are making up 80% of the country, obviously they're not doing that great of a job. If the manufacturing, which shrunk, is all of a sudden.
Well, a lot of the.
And maybe that's the issue. We've switched to such a service economy. Maybe we should have never outsourced. Maybe.
A lot of the outsourced jobs, though,
were manufacturing.
Right, but there were a lot of them were large manufacturers. They weren't small business. A lot of them were 100, 200, 500, $600 million a year companies. They weren't $10 million a year companies.
Like Walt Disney.
Disney, Nike.
All the people outsourcing manufacturing jobs are billion dollar
and
companies.
Here's, hold on.
But they're all $1 billion
And
companies.
Here's the other deal when it comes to that, too, that you have to look into. A lot of the reason for outsourcing, what's the whole reason for outsourcing? Increasing profits, lowering price points to stay competitive. Well, the whole reason that they do that is also uphold their commitment to shareholders, the publicly traded company. So this whole thing is kind of like a snowball.
By the way, Alex handed me a note that said Chicago is up 20% in jobs. In manufacturing jobs. There was a report on that today. I don't know if anyone saw it. It's funny you brought that up. That there are some that are speculating that is full of shit.
You know, I just want to throw
it
out
there. It was on ABC, I believe, 5 o'clock news.
I want to commend Chicago.
Because the guy that does the report is a good friend of Rahm's. And they're both from he's from Chicago, the guy that did the report, that did the survey. And they're just speculating that there may be some funny business behind the numbers.
I went to the Chicago apartment summit.
Yep.
And they're, you know, obviously with the interest rates as low as they are and bad credit, you know, people are renting more. So the Chicago the apartment.
No, I'm sure that's true. Well, yeah.
And they emphasize. I mean, these are the smartest real estate owners.
But people are always renting.
Yeah, the rental market is up in Chicago.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Smartest real estate people in Chicago were at this convention.
Yeah, but that's only one portion of a huge industry.
Huge portion on how manufacturing has jump-started the rental property in Chicago and how much money is actually filtering back into this system. I mean, you got to think about it. How many SBA loans are they giving out to give Chicago manufacturing companies more money to buy new equipment to compete with people overseas.
Hold on. I want to play this video for you from ABC.
Yeah, right. That's the big thing. Can we bring some level of manufacturing back here, compete overseas, then your workers are able to spend
money. All right. Who wants to hear this video? Chicago jobs.
Sure.
Oh, well, I have 14 seconds before my video plays because ABC wants me to know about healthy living.
You know, hold on. I just want to throw this out here. I want to commend the Forever Pan Candy Company for not leaving Chicago, still being
right,
here and
here
manufacturing their candy here.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel says he's ecstatic about a new University of Chicago report that says the city is leading the nation in job creation and reducing unemployment. Emanuel sat down for a one-on-one interview with ABC 7 political reporter Charles Thomas. And Charles is here with a story that's new at 5. Charles?
Rahm, the mayor, was more than willing to talk about this very positive report, but it also confirmed that Chicago's job story is truly a tale of two cities.
I went and looked at all the biggest cities, and it's been quite a year for Chicago.
UFC economist Austin Goolsbee, 7 pages of good news for Chicago, compared Labor Department data for big American cities from the latest available 12-month period.
Our unemployment rate from May of 11 to May of 12, which is the latest year of the data, fell the most of all major cities in the country.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who was inaugurated in May of 2011, called the reported 28,000 new jobs created since his inauguration an affirmation of his efforts since taking office.
You have to go get these jobs. You have to go get the companies to move here, open up shop. We don't create jobs. We create the environment for the private sector to create jobs.
The report said Chicago was second worst in the country after Los Angeles for job creation between 2008 and last year. It did not specify which sectors of the economy were leading the jobs recovery or where in Chicago the hiring is happening.
It only applied to certain neighborhoods, not citywide.
In high unemployment, crime-ridden Inglewood on the south side, residents see little evidence of a jobs boom.
Like, look at it. And there's a lot of people that's farming could be earning paychecks.
All this rob, selling drugs, all this won't happen if we had more jobs out here.
Emanuel said Chicago will use an improved city colleges system to prepare the chronically unemployed for work.
Is that their city is on the move, creating the opportunity. Now we got to make sure part of that opportunity is their skills are ready for the economy of tomorrow.
As White House Chief of Staff, Emanuel worked with Goolsbee, who was then chairman of President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors. The professor insisted the glowing report on Emanuel's job creation efforts was not influenced by politics.
Look, I admit to, I live in Chicago. I have a bias for the city.
And you like this guy.
And I do like the mayor. This is not commissioned by the mayor. This is, I'm an economist. This is what I do.
While pleased with the report, the mayor said he was not satisfied. In fact, he announced today the McGladrey Consulting Company will move its corporate headquarters to Chicago.
I'm sorry. I smell some bullshit with that. A little bit. Come on, a little bit. Lenny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Lenny, a little bit. Did you hear the guy, too, at the end? He's like, no, I worked with the mayor, and I liked the man, but I swear, I'm an economist. Yeah, yeah. What did you think?
That seems like a real funny story.
Yeah.
There was a whole lot of undertones going on there.
A little bit. Len, what did you think of the whole thing, though? Private job market?
Well, they couldn't say where the jobs were created.
That's my thing. This whole report, 7 pages. By the way, seven-page report?
The city hasn't redone all of its permitting and all that stuff to make it easier.
But, Lenny, help me here. 7-page report. And, by the way, for people out there that don't know, they count the title page as a page. So, 7-page report.
You mean 6-page report?
How is that even a report, Lenny? Lenny, there's 16-year-olds writing 10-page papers at home for history class.
Maybe you shouldn't write if your kids write that long a paper.
What's that tell me about my government?
Be a fucking UFC economist and write a fucking...
Basically an Ivy League school.
Yeah. Isn't that ridiculous? A 6-page report about jobs going way up in Chicago, but they can't say where and they can't say how.
So I got an idea.
They couldn't say if it was manufacturing. They couldn't say if it was private. They couldn't say if it was public. They couldn't say anything.
This news just in.
Yeah.
The Chicago French Market is open tomorrow morning. And would anybody like to go get some smoked Montreal-style pastrami?
You have work, or I would.
I don't start till 1 tomorrow. We could go at like 10 o'clock.
And
all right, I think it's time for us to wrap up.
Yeah, it is time for us to wrap up.
I want to talk about this.
No, we got to save this for another show. It's 10:30.
No,
it's
10:30. Is it 10:30?
Yeah, no. People are already tuned out, folks. We're jibber jabbering. I know.
I think they enjoy it. By the way,
what were you saying?
If people have a problem with our political talk, can you please send me an email? Because I've not gotten any email saying they don't like our.
I don't have it.
Wait, UF what? You were just saying UF. We
talk about University UF. French Market.
No. What'd Chicago French Market.
Whatever.
No, you
some
just
French.
Said UF.
Some French bullshit.
You just said UFC.
I was talking about UFC.
What about UFC?
What was I saying about UFC?
This is why we're ending the show.
Talk about UFC.
Wait, we're getting old. I'm getting old.
UFC isn't even real. It's like the WWF.
Good night, folks.
It's like the WWF.
Good night, folks.
All right. Well, Mikey says we got to go. That means we got to go. All right. For Michael Turzo and Leonard Cannata.
And Mr. Matthew Aaron.
Mr. James Herson, who joined us, who was a fine guest.
And Vito Luisi.
And the would you stop
the whole Luisi plan?
I'm going to redo this.
I'm redoing this, so I do it right. For Michael Turzo, Leonard Cannata, Alex Luisi. You happy now? You happy? Because he contributed so much, just annoying me pretty much. Yeah, like when he was jump roping for my entertainment. I would like to thank our guest, Brad Sherwood. That seems like 5 hours ago. And James Herson, who you could check out the Left Coast Report. And you can go to jamesherson.com. And I highly recommend reading Hollywood Nation, whether you're conservative or liberal, because it is a fascinating read regardless. And then you wouldn't give a shit. But all right, we'll see you next week.